This is HPR episode 2859 entitled HPR NYE Show 2018-2019 Part 7. It is hosted by Honky Magu and is about 179 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, the HPR community comes together to say Happy New Year and chat.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
So, Ms. X, you're in the shipping business?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? We were having a conversation about portable battery chargers for cell phones, sorry.
You work for a shipping company?
I work for a ginormous company that has their hand in every little pot that has to do anything with logistics. They're international. My division is third-party warehousing or fulfillment.
Well, my brother, as I said, is long-haul trucker.
What company does he drive for?
Decker.
I'm not out on the dock very often anymore because I'm usually chained to my desk. But I'm sure we've had them in a time or two.
Yeah, well, as I said, he covers the only area that he doesn't get into with this company is the Northeast. He tends to stay down toward Georgia and whatnot when he's in the East.
Yeah, we don't usually do a lot of truckload hauls outbound. We get a lot of that inbound, of course. Most of the stuff that we get comes in from the port or out of Canada.
Where's my Amazon package right now?
I don't know. I don't work for Amazon. Wink, wink.
Well,
here you go. www.ups.com.
Actually, my brother has got it tough. He's in a 2019 Volvo truck.
Stop right there. If he thinks that's tough, right? Insert sarcasm here.
Automatic transmission, air conditioning, satellite radio. It's got an APU that keeps the batteries charged and provides house power so he doesn't have to run the main engine, and it also keeps the main engine warm and main batteries charged. Yeah, he did have a little trouble adjusting to a vehicle with no clutch pedal.
Yeah, my dad was kind of old school, and he had an issue with that too. He's back from when they used to have to double clutch and had 18 gears, and, you know, he missed one crossing the summit, and, you know, good luck. But now they're all automatic. He said there is a learning curve. I wouldn't have believed it, but he said there is a learning curve.
Well, I believe that this is the second truck with an automatic that he had, but he was saying the first time he had phantom pedal troubles. And he said because this is a Volvo truck with a Volvo engine and transmission, they're coordinated much better than the Peterbilt that he had prior to.
When I had my first car growing up was a 5-speed Honda manual. And I remember I used to have to sometimes drive my mom's automatic because my dad would have my car for some reason. I couldn't tell you what at this stage of my life. And I had phantom pedal problems too. And my sister was always the first one to tattle on me because she thought for sure my parents would be livid because I stomped on the brakes that hard. I was looking for a clutch pedal that wasn't there.
Well, I think they should install a dead pedal just to ease the withdrawal symptoms.
I think my sister probably would have had less whiplash.
Yes, Kat, it is a good sandwich. Thank you very much for your interest. Yes, my brother's home terminal is over in Missoula, Montana.
I always liked Montana.
Well, it's pretty good, although some of his things can be a little challenging with the weather.
Yeah, I imagine so. But, you know, if you kind of like being a hermit, winter's nice there.
So, since my brother is basically a turtle, he doesn't really have to worry about it too much. His the sleeper that he's got with its refrigerator and microwave, I think it has a microwave. He didn't install a TV in this one.
He's probably got the internet. He doesn't need TV.
I was going to say, some of those sleeper units are just about as big as the... I mean, they're just about as big as an RV in some senses, but not a lot of them are that huge, but they're all pretty well apportioned. I've seen some that, as long as you're not taking a family of six, would be perfect for, you know, just... They're pretty nice.
It's a hotel on wheels. Should be awesome.
Well, he... with one of his prior companies, he had a little chihuahua that would go with him.
There was someone, and I have no idea where I spoke to him. He went everywhere with his wife, and he got the extended sleep cab. So basically for his wife to have a bit of space there. And that, I don't know, it seemed pretty, I imagined it was fairly luxurious if you can convince your wife to come driving
around.
Yeah,
well, oftentimes all that's missing is the toilet and the shower.
Yeah.
And I've even seen some of our drivers come in and they'll tell you they've got a little Kim toilet in there, which I'm not so sure is pleasant, but I guess it's better than, I don't know, to some people it's better.
Yeah. I follow a fellow on YouTube called, his channel is called Cruising the Cut, and he's on a narrow boat, basically a powered canal boat, and he uses what they call a cassette toilet, so that would probably work in a truck too. Yes, and it's impressive when you realize the truck itself has satellite navigation, satellite communications, radar.
Drives itself.
No, they're working
only
on that.
Only if it's a Tesla.
No, they're working on that one. Although my brother was in the service late 70s, early 80s, and evidently he did have to deal with someone who mistook a cruise control for an autopilot.
There was that person who bought an RV, was driving down the road, hit the cruise control, and then went into the back to make themselves a sandwich. And oddly enough, when they crashed, they then tried to sue the manufacturer because it did not say that the cruise control would not steer for them. This is decades ago when cruise control was fairly new, and they did win some money out of it. It's one of these stupid lawsuits, things like the McDonald's lady.
Yeah, but here's the thing, okay? Here's the thing. Your entire existence, you have never been able to push a button and have a car drive itself entirely without some kind of human interaction. Why would you suddenly decide that today when you got in your motorhome, you could push a button and everything would work like a charm? Wouldn't you be a little leery as a human and sit there and at least babysit the process for a while?
Well, actually, my brother helped clean up that incident in the military, because evidently the person who had the accident was diplomatic royalty.
Sorry, that was probably a bit harsh. I just don't understand how common sense can be so uncommon.
Well,
you haven't talked to a lawyer recently.
This person was coming from...
No, common sense dictates that I should not speak to them.
The Middle East, and his jet had an autopilot, and he believed that America was technologically advanced enough to put it in everything.
Just because you don't believe in lawyers doesn't mean they don't believe in you.
I believe in you.
I don't. I'm just kidding.
Please don't sue us.
Actually, back in the bad old days, I believe it was illegal in Massachusetts to be a lawyer. My, how times have changed.
Reminds me of that Star Trek Next Generation episode where Q talks to Picard and they're talking about the time in history where they killed all the lawyers.
That was Shakespeare, wasn't it? First we kill all the lawyers?
Could be, I don't know that well.
Wait a minute. You don't think Star Trek couldn't steal from the classics?
Well, they had a Shakespearean actor on there, so...
That's true.
I was gonna say, I figured that would be his favorite thing to do. Make it so.
But I don't think he wrote the episode.
I think one of the most interesting things that I've seen was at a convention where Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner, as an Ashby, one of my favorite actors, since Commander Data has very much the Ashby traits, he spotted Brent Spiner and he said, "Commander Data, you're out of uniform."
I like some of the conventions where Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner are, and there's one of them that the Patrick Stewart's up on stage taking questions, and then Brent Spiner comes up and starts asking questions, except he keeps going like, "Okay, my captain, so I've got a question for you, my captain." It's hilarious.
Captain, my captain.
Yeah, he keeps calling it like, "Captain, my captain." It's brilliant. And then Brent Spiner does a pretty good Picard impersonation, oddly enough. And apparently at one point, Patrick Stewart was married to, she was like a producer or something for Star Trek. And at one point, he was working late, as quite often the actors had to, because they're trying to film something. And Brent phones Patrick's wife up, okay, impersonating him, and tries to say, you know, something's come up, honey, I'm sorry, I won't be able to come. And just keeps going until she realizes that it's Brent. But you can YouTube these, you should look for them. It's actually very amusing.
Actually, what I find amusing was finding out which members of the cast hijacked their uniforms.
Because Patrick Stewart was chastising the others. He said, "I just went and asked if I could pay them," because these apparently were like $3,000 uniforms that they were wearing. It was like wool things, like handmade.
Are these the same Hollywood celebrities who are mad at me because I don't buy a smaller vehicle?
Yeah.
And there are kids starving in Africa?
But for the prop department to make these one-off uniforms, basically tailor fit to each actor, costs like $3,000 or some strange, crazy amount. And a bunch of them basically just stole extra uniforms. And Patrick Stewart went up to ask, and he said, like, "I'll write you a check, $3,000, you know." And they basically told him no. He was most upset. He's like, "I should have just stole it."
I wish they would continue with the blunt talk, but I don't think they're going to.
I know one uniform which the actress in question, I know I should say actor, but I'm old-fashioned. I was a 50s kid raised in the 60s.
I still say waitress and stewardess.
Well, if you were raised in the 50s, even though the decade had a 6 in it, you know, where all kinds of ladies were called girls, stuff like that.
And none of them got offended because it meant they weren't old.
Yes, and you could open a door without having to cover sensitive organs.
I think you should just let the door smack every one of those bitches in the ass. Sorry, did I say that out loud?
Well, that's why...
No, just on the internet.
Even better!
That's why there's a big YouTube channel called MGTOW, which is basically men going their own way and avoiding attachment and cohabitation with ladies.
I just don't understand when everybody got so hypersensitive. And I mean, I don't know. Take a Tylenol or go die quietly.
Well, there's an interesting... One of my newly discovered YouTubers is a lady. This is all one word. Blonde in the belly of the beast. She's a counter-feminist and an interesting and attractive lady. By the way, there's legislation in at least one Australian state where putting your child's gender on the birth certificate is an opt-in process.
And they're allowed to change it at a later date. Which is just, I just don't get it, because it's a simple XY chromosome thing, and if you don't tell your doctor that you were born a girl or a boy, when they're looking at, well, I've got a pain in my stomach, and it's cervical cancer, but they don't realize because you turn up and say, "I'm a boy now," it's kind of important information that they need to know. I probably said that wrong, didn't I?
No, I don't know if you said it wrong. I'm just American and you're not. I just need to know that we're talking about the same thing. Cervical?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, maybe it's just an English thing. I'm going to say that's what it is?
Yeah, I'm sure that's all it is.
And not the amount of bourbon I've drunk.
Also, the tests are different for cervical cancer and, let's say, prostate cancer.
Obviously, it would have to be, right? But I don't know why. Yeah, I don't get it.
I mean,
I don't see why you can't medically be one thing and identify as something else. Maybe there should be a space in the birth certificate to say, yeah, when you're born, it's that. And then sometime later, if you want, you can add on, I really identify as this, but you're still medically have all that written down somewhere. Because like you're saying, that's kind of important if you're going to go do medical stuff.
Right. Well, and think about it this way. I know this is kind of hyperbolic, but okay. We've all read the stories about the people who think that they're cats or
think that they're dead.
Or there's all kinds of scenarios, right? That's the one I could pull up right now in my brain. But you know exactly what I'm saying. That doesn't change the fact that they're human, but they still can, I mean, their close family and friends, if they choose to play along, well, by all means, they can call them, you know, Felix and pet them while they purr. I don't care, but that still doesn't change the fact that they're a human female or a human male, right? They still are what they are.
If you've watched too many episodes of House, there are some people that are both, and they don't realize it until there's a problem.
I don't think that that's the norm. I'm not saying that you do.
I think it's possible. It's just possible.
Yeah, well, it's also possible that lightning strikes my house right now. It's probably not going to happen.
Yes.
Has left the room.
And the thing is that some friends of mine were going through the Carolinas, and they happened to be transgendered, and they were recording things, and they said, goodness, we're out of North Carolina, so I can actually go to the bathroom.
I mean, I don't want anyone to take anything I just said to mean that I'm not sympathetic to people who identify as one thing and are born as another. I mean, there's truly got to be some mental turmoil going on there for you, no matter what. But I just don't understand why everyone's got to be so angry all the time if somebody accidentally calls Caitlin. You know what I mean?
And that confuses me. So if I'm talking about when that person won the races, do I call him he then or her? Because now he's a her, but he was a he. But at the time he was a he, so I should call him a he? Like, because if I'm talking about when I was a kid, I refer to myself as a child. I'm not a child anymore, but I was back then. So I don't know. Basically, I'm wrong because I'm a white male. So that's all I know.
Yeah, add another space for that. When you're white male, just out of space, wrong, and there you go.
Yeah, well, Australia has a large program to teach young boys not to rape women.
Okay, they really just need decent parents to do that job. I mean, seriously, every child comes equipped with a reset button on the back of their head. You hit it enough times, they figure it out.
Well, the thing is, also, You have to teach people who aren't going to rape not to rape, because you can't teach women who may run into people who haven't read the memo to defend themselves, because that would be unladylike.
Oops, I'm not unlady. I'm not ladylike at all, ever.
Well,
I have been known to punch people in the throat.
The concept of self-defense cannot be issued to women, otherwise they would want things like mace or tasers or something so that they could defend themselves and act like adults who were being attacked. Now, if you define every male as a potential rapist, then you can focus on the bad males who, because they're male, they have to be bad, and they have to be told how bad they are.
I don't fit into any of those categories you just outlined. I am quite competent at defending myself. I can't run and I can't fight, so I own a gun.
Oh, Australia took guns away because there was an incident, a mass shooting, and they passed it as a health protection act.
Same as the UK.
guess what? People still die in both countries victims of violence.
Yes, but you see, also, they made it illegal for anyone who happened to have what were formerly legal firearms to dispose of them to anyone except law enforcement.
You know, I don't like to get on these topics on this stuff here, but if you don't want to own a gun, or you're not comfortable with guns, or you don't necessarily believe in that variety of violence, even if it is to defend yourself, that's your prerogative. You don't have to. But don't take that ability away from the rest of us, right?
Well, in Canada, there was a motion to have all semi-automatic firearms kept in gun club vaults.
I'm not saying I'm against any kind of regulation to try and control whose hands that kind of firepower can fall into. But I think that we have proven in this world time and time again that passing a law and instituting bans does not keep anything out of the hands of a criminal, because the criminal will always find a way. So the only people who follow the laws are law-abiding citizens, and they're not the ones you have to be afraid of.
I mean, yeah, murder is illegal. Murder still happens.
Rape is illegal. Yep. Rape still happens.
Drugs are illegal, and I'm pretty sure I could go down to the street corner and pretty much
find somebody to get something from.
It doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
Bans don't work any more than boycotts work. It's education that you have to follow through on, not
that's just
stop certain people from doing certain things.
And if they're seeing an uptick in gun violence, maybe they need to go back to, like, okay, think about it. 40 years ago, there were more guns in, more homes had guns. There are more guns available now, but they're not in as many homes. It's like a select few people have tons of guns, and most households have none, or something like that. But in any event, I think things were a little bit better off when people hunted more and knew more about guns. I don't think we had nearly this amount of misuse of the firearms, because more people knew more about them, and more people had them. And because of that, the people who would have committed the crimes with the guns knew their chances of succeeding in what they were attempting to do were lower. I don't know. I think there might be a correlation there. I know correlation is not causation and vice versa, but it's something that I think we really need to talk about in a public forum.
Well, yes. If you're breaking into a home in Texas where the homeowner may well have a shotgun but know how to use it, or you're breaking into a home in New York City where the homeowner is going to be very unlikely to be able to buy or legally own a weapon for self-defense, which is the better bet?
Well, I can't pretend that I have all the answers, and I don't think that anyone that's currently on here is either. I don't think that for a minute, but I definitely think a healthy dialogue should be opened. I just don't know that in this current climate, in this current political scene, that anything healthy is going to happen. That's the sad part.
Yeah, because it normally turns around, someone will look at you and say, oh, you like guns, you hate children and want them to die. Well, wait, what? Where did that come from? I got accused of being part of the problem because I'm a white male. No offense.
And you don't want to help the children, of course.
Yeah, and basically she wanted to get pissed off for whatever reason, and I just happened to be there. Now, in my mind, you see, this makes her racist and sexist because it's my fault because I'm a white male. If I turned around and said, drugs are your fault because you're a black male, suddenly I'm a racist. So in my mind, because I should back up. When I was at school, I was in the sixth form, which is hard to sort of explain in American terms. Think sort of like you're doing an associate's. And there was a teacher, and we had a morning assembly, basically. The teacher was reading this story about there was some shop, and they had a rule that only two school children were allowed to enter at one time, because they had a problem with theft. Some kids from a local school had stolen some stuff. So if they only allowed two children in, they could keep an eye on the children. That's the theory. And she was reading the story and said, well, so what if it was the sign said only two blacks are allowed in, or only two women are allowed in? And they said, it's, you know, it's not okay because it's children. It's just, it's if you switch one for the other and it becomes racist or sexist, then it was always racist or sexist. It's not one of these things. It can't magically become this because whatever argument is now the power struggle or something, isn't it? Because white people have power, they can't be made that you can't be racist against whites or something. No, it's a simple, if you change color from one to the other and it becomes racist, it was always racist. It's that simple. So turn around and say it's my fault because I'm a white male. It's racist and sexist.
I'm an equal opportunity hater. I don't care who you are. If you're stupid, I hate you. That's how I feel. And I'm sorry. Guys, I'm going to turn in for the night. It was really good talking to you. I hope you still want to talk to me in the future. We kind of got off on some topics that were a little bit frightening. Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year.
And thank you, ma'am, and Mr. X as well.
Thank you, all the Zokes.
And we'll talk to everyone in a year.
Or sooner, we hope. We hope sooner.
Or Friday.
Or Friday.
Friday'd be cool.
It reminds me, somebody was saying, well, if you hate against the police, it can't be a hate crime.
Why? Because police is not a race?
Well, the definition of hate crime is against any member of an organization, gender, etc., ethnic group, what have you. If the police are not an organization...
So if you hated your local nonprofit, that could be a hate crime?
Well, if you're hating them because they are belonging to a local nonprofit, yes, that's a hate crime.
Well, then you could have a hate crime if you're hating the local police because the police are a group.
But they were saying, but there was a female that was saying, well, you can't have that because they're not a minority.
So to be a hate crime, your local nonprofit would have to be a minority?
Well, because they're potentially white males, which is a majority segment of the population, they can't come under the protected minority banner. However, the definition of hate crime does not say that you have to be a minority. It just says you have to be part of a group, whether it's part of a given church or a given ethnic background, whatever. And if you count noses among the population, the number of police versus the number of civilians, if the police are not a minority by head count, I would be very surprised.
Well, how would the police not be a group?
Because they are not a minority group. They are not a they're not a minority gender. They're not a minority color. They're not a minority ethnic group. And then when you had a white male read the definition of hate crime, which didn't say that you had to be a minority, you just had to be a member of a group, the female was very shocked that anyone could defend a white the police or any group that could be considered non-minority, rather non-designated minority. Just like in the Boston school districts where the public school population is, well, the ones that are left are largely, shall we say, people of color. Yet those people of color, even though they're the majority of the population in the schools, are considered minorities. Also, an incident that happened to a friend of my father's who happened to be living in a town near here where they had people from minorities from deep in Boston bust into suburban schools. Now, what happened was that these people of color were wearing, shall we say, black power sweatshirts and whatnot. Well, a white woman made the mistake of wearing a white power shirt of similar design into a public school in this town. The black ladies hauled this person into the bathroom and discussed the issue physically. Now, the people in the METCO program that were bussed in were also under METCO discipline. They were not under local discipline. So if a white person or a person who lived in the town who invited these people from Boston to come and get a better education, if they broke a rule, they were hammered for it. The people imported from Boston were counseled by Metco counselors. If you want to truly generate racism, unequal handling of the races or colors or what have you is a dandy way to ensure it.
Well, in that matter, I think I'm done. I hope to see you Friday. I'll try to catch up with you guys then.
Well, thank you for hanging in.
Absolutely. You too.
I may hang in here a little while.
Ken should be awake by now, huh?
Well, I'll hold down the fort. I was late to the party, so I'm going to be late to leave as well.
All right, well, have a good night.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Is there anybody out there?
Oh, yes, I'm out here. Good morning.
And now I have the audio turned back on. Hi, everyone. Happy New Year.
Well, thank you very much. I'm holding the fort since the Western contingent bailed it a minute ago.
What time is it there now?
I have a little after 6 in the morning, Eastern Standard.
Whoa, it's 12 past 12 here, and only 47 minutes to go. Until it officially ends, we'll obviously leave it running after that. So, was it busy?
It's been off and on. There'll be plenty of silence to be compressed.
Yeah, there'll still be plenty of time, I reckon.
And there'll be some segments, well, let's say got a little more political than technical.
So the New Year show's all about, I reckon.
May I ask where you're coming from?
Yeah, I live in the Netherlands now. From Ireland originally, so I live in the Netherlands. And, yeah.
Well, a good friend of mine through my college years was from Harlem.
Yes. Harlem, I reckon the original one was. Why am I saying I reckon the whole time? I don't know. The original one? Or the one in New York?
The Netherlands version.
Yeah, it's North Amsterdam there.
That was during late 70s, early 80s. Yeah, my friend had lived in the U.S. but went home, did his military service, and then came back having fulfilled his NATO obligation and thus was free to go to college here.
Okay. That stopped a good while ago.
Well, as I said, this was 1978, 79, 80, 81, 82. And also, he didn't mind getting drafted when he went home because nobody was shooting at the Dutch.
Yeah, good point, yeah.
Which does improve the service situation.
Indeed.
Roughly the same time, my brother was serving in Germany and in a Pershing missile unit.
Okay. And did you serve at all?
No, I did not. I got my PTSD domestically.
Okay.
But then again, I have a number of physical issues that would have probably made me not pass the physical anyway.
Okay. So, going to go back to bed or stay on?
Well, I'm going to hang in until at least it's time to shut down and see if anybody shows up. I don't believe I've had the chance to express my appreciation for finally meeting you, sir.
Oh, no, don't overdo it there. It's nice to chat with people, actually. I do like the New Year show for that. And thanks for staying on, keeping the thing going. That's awesome.
Well, back in the day, I used to work 4 p.m. to 8 a.m. Friday into Saturday morning, so this is much like what I used to do, except much more fun than the guarding a security gate. Well, actually, it was a stop sign and a speed bump.
Yeah, to protect and serve. Or is it serve and protect? I don't know.
Well, the most interesting conversation I had was with a state police officer who had a little problem with the rules because I said to him, okay, officer, you tell me who you're going to see and I will lock up the gate and I will escort you to their unit. If you're visiting someone, I'll give them a call, and if they would want to have coffee with you at God-awful in the morning, that's perfectly okay. But because you're in an official vehicle, I cannot allow you to prowl our property in an unofficial official capacity.
What were you minding? A barracks or something?
I was minding a condominium complex, and it was my job to, when the police had reason to escort them to a unit to talk to a resident, or if the police officer wanted to pull in to have a coffee break with someone who he said was his girlfriend on site, I would be perfectly willing to call her up and announce him. But one of the reasons they had security was to make certain that official visits were official visits.
Oh, right. Was this like a gated community or something?
Yes, it was somewhat gated. It was a condo complex, and there were some people, including one fellow that was pretty well acknowledged to be a turf accountant. Some people may have had reason to want to keep officials at arm's length.
Interesting.
Also, there was part of our job was to try to keep teenage boys away from residents' daughters while they were working overnight.
Uh-huh.
Now, how I was supposed to do this while sitting in a gatehouse 50 or 100 yards away from the entrance to the building. Also on our complex, there was the buildings on one side of the street were under our protection, such as it was, and the buildings on the other side of the street were not so honored. So somebody could say that I'm just visiting somebody over there, and they could just drive through.
Okay, yeah, I see a problem with this logic.
Also, the young lady most in demand, shall we say, lived in a unit which had entrances on two levels. So you could be, even when we were patrolling, you could be dealing, which we did on weekends that night, you could be dealing with the front door to her unit, and people could be moving in and out through the floor above. Security people celebrated this young lady's 18th birthday when she was legal to allow her own guests in, nearly as much as the young lady probably did.
Oh, wow.
Well, they had a pool with a 2-foot-high fence. The problem with a pool with a 2-foot-high fence is that it can inhibit rescue activities, but is not tall enough to keep people out of said body of water.
Yeah, probably aids them going into it more than anything else.
And there were, you know, you're at the gate, you know, 50 yards away, your ability to control access was strictly limited.
Yeah, not without some sort of fence going around.
But then again, a lot of the things in this building, in this complex, were more features than actual assets. Oh, and while we're here at New Year's, I must point out an incident that occurred on a New Year's Eve party.
Yeah?
Well, I have to describe the facility so you get the background. You have a cast concrete floor, cinder block walls. The overhead is the roof of the facility is made out of precast concrete slabs.
Yeah, I know the type.
Now, Tweedledum and Tweedledee have a beef, and one of them is wearing a pistol and a shoulder holster. So they have a beef inside this facility. One of them opens his coat. His opponent sees the pistol in the shoulder holster. During his distraction, the person wearing the gun sucker punches the surprised individual who he's having the beef with. In that environment, I will say to you that using the gun as a distraction for a sucker punch is the proper use of that firearm. Because drawing and shooting such firearm is definitely not the proper use of said firearm. But distracting your opponent so he is vulnerable to nature's weapons is, if anything, the only proper use of that weapon. Barring you're going to apply it in the Bat Masterson technique, which is to say, you lay the barrel alongside your opponent's head until he has no further interest in the proceeding. I believe Bat Masterson was far more famous for using his pistols that way than in a more noisy fashion. Besides, cowboys you'd knocked out with your pistol survived to pay the fine in the morning.
Yeah, good point. I'm going to go grab a coffee before we close this up. I'll be back in a minute.
Well, this is not a place where we rush very much.
Yeah, that's true.
Good morning.
Yeah, who was still here? You, that miner.
Ken is off to get coffee.
I
don't know if he's going to have some Irish coffee.
I ended up getting some sleep, it seems, so yeah.
Oh yes, Irish coffee, the famous invention caused by aircraft in the Shannon River.
Yeah. I was going to be off this completely, but change of mind slightly. And plus I woke up again, so.
Well, I used to, every week, I used to work a 4 p.m. to 8 a.m. shift, so, and toward the end of my tour as a security guard, I was working 64 hours a week or something, basically round the clock, so I'm used to being up at all hours.
I'm back.
Yeah, I'm a little bit like that as well. I can be awake at nearly all hours, and yeah.
Seb returns. It must be the New Year show.
Yeah, but I'm not keeping it going for another five hours.
Come on.
Not this time.
We have tradition here.
Well, I was wondering, Ken, was that Irish coffee you had?
Oh, no. Regular old coffee. Not after last night, I'm afraid.
Well, I'm just wondering because I've always been fascinated by the fact that Irish coffee, according to what I heard, was a side effect of the aviation industry.
Was indeed. I was there, actually, in the bar where Irish coffees were invented.
On the Shannon?
That's the very one, sir.
That was back in the days when the drink service was after you landed, instead of after you took off.
Yep, correct. I think I told the story before here.
Well, I heard it elsewhere, and I was always sort of tickled.
Recall it to me.
Well, if what I remember, and again, my memory is not of the best, the flying boats which they used for transatlantic service would land in the Shannon River. And after a long, cold transatlantic flight in a flying boat, well, you need a little pick-me-up. And the Irish coffee was designed so that between the coffee and the addition, you would be picked up one way or another.
I was told the story by the guys down there, and they said that the ladies and gentlemen, the passengers, were allowed to drink, but they didn't look. This is on the way out, so outbound flights to Newfoundland. But the pilots were not allowed to drink, obviously, because, hey, there was no such thing as autopilots, and even today it's considered not very cool for your pilot to be drunk getting on an airplane. So they would have coffee for the pilots at the bar. And then the barman, whatever his name was, would say, would you like me to turn that into an Irish coffee there, sir? And then they could quietly have a little bit of a warming glow before they went up into their unheated, unpressurized cabins and flew the whole way across the Atlantic.
You're saying that they added a little antifreeze to the coffee.
That's the bunny, yeah.
Right, Irish coffee, but Ken, is there, because you're in the Netherlands now, is there anything else that you really like? Because it's Dutch now.
Well, actually, not deviating from the story, I heard recently about the Dutch Jenever, or what do you call it in English? Gin, Dutch gin. You ever hear the expression of Dutch courage in the Protestant Catholic Wars?
Probably.
The Dutch soldiers were allotted a snifter of gin, Jenever, before they went into battle. So that tradition spread through the armies and became a little bit of Dutch courage before you went into battle.
Yes, well, even the Royal Navy did a bit of that until what they call, I think it was Black Tuesday. It was a day, I think, in the 70s when they decided a tot of rum and modern weapons just didn't go together quite.
So, Seb, what have you been up to all year?
Not that much, really. It's another year gone by in a different place, which is nice. Oh, not that far, really, from where I was living before, but still. Because I'm in a better location for getting around now and things like that. It's just outside the city, which is very good.
Good.
Means you go down there more and do things as well.
Yeah, good, nice. I'm going to now continue scanning the photographs that I started scanning at the beginning of the show. I had finished last night at about 8 o'clock or so, I thought, and then I found that the box I was pulling all the photos out of was actually a top box, because there were two additional boxes underneath that box. So rather than being almost finished, I'm barely started.
I have here an interesting document from the early 90s. It's called Exploring the Internet, an Internet Travelogue by Carl Malamut. And one of the things that he did is he translated a bunch of ISO documents into PDFs and put them on a server provided by Sun. And he also gave the ISO PDF documents instead of their original data was in some proprietary form which they couldn't even deal with. But going around the world, he went into the Netherlands and he went into a little corner store, and he was surprised to find that this corner store was selling a bunch of marijuana of various kinds and whatnot. And he said that his travel fog brain didn't need any extra help. But it was interesting that some places for so long have legalized marijuana for decades.
No, it's actually not legal, it's just not prosecuted.
Yeah, this country is still schizophrenic on that. Because there's a lot of stuff where it's state regulations allow it, but the federal still consider it to be the evil weed.
And and in this one it's, they talk about it sometimes, how it could go legal, but it's not going to happen soon, it seems.
The real problem that they have in America is while there are industries, including some providing purely medicinal infusions, extractions, etc., with no psychotropic properties whatsoever, or at least none of the recreational properties, because of the federal view of things, money made in these industries cannot be put in the usual financial institutions, nor can it be safely expressed on federal tax forms, which is to say the states are recreating prohibition one state at a time. As I recall, it didn't work so well the first time.
That's true.
Now we just need a winter time as well, as in when the time zones get changed again and go back hours. Because of this, 16 hours ahead thing, and was it summertime, and America, and that island moving, whatever, and then the 12 hours behind thing. So, yeah, then we'll have a 30-hour day for this instead of 26. 30-hour show instead of 26. Did you hear me?
Yeah, but how is it going to be a 30-hour show?
If the time zones mess up again, summertime and the island moving, yes, so we've got 16 hours ahead, so it starts, and and then 12 hours behind.
Get affected. The time zones will only get affected on the international dateline, not on the zero meridian. As if Ireland's move one, Ireland or England or Europe moves left or right, we're just either closer to the east or closer to the west, but you're still within that bracket of the 24-hour period.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, I guess so. But we did end up with the 16 hours ahead and 12 hours behind still.
Yeah, or relatively we'd move, but the window itself wouldn't. I would find it very hard to see how they could increase it more than 26 hours. But, yeah, fine. Whatever.
Just need that last time zone now to be like, you know what? We don't want to be last anymore. Or one of them if there's another place, and you can have, yeah. So what have you been doing all year except for photos?
Yeah, it's been a strange year. It hasn't been too bad, but it hasn't been the best year ever had, personally. Hoping that it gets sorted this year. It'll get better, it'll get a little worse.
It will get better or worse.
My personal situation that I don't intend to talk about here.
Right, yeah. Okay. I think Netminer might have not made it to the very end, unless he is actually still there.
He was valiant up until now.
I'm here. Came late to the party because I didn't realize it started at 5 a.m. Eastern.
Wow, there's 176 terabytes of data sent over the mobile network of one of the providers on Saturday, on last night.
100 and how many terabytes?
176 terabytes.
What, from this, yeah?
On one of the providers, probably 50% of, yeah, the probably about 50% of the network traffic in the Netherlands yesterday, during the night, the New Year's change, had 176 terabytes of data in video messages.
Yeah, listening to HPR New Year show.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, have you looked at the new Intel chips where the physical and virtual address spaces are going to go from absurd to petabytes of data?
No, I missed that.
Yeah, Intel has announced an expanded both physical and virtual address space in its upcoming chips, petabytes of addressable memory.
Okay, so right, we've got about 10 minutes to go officially, so I think let's have this as a topic at the end. So open source or Linux predictions of 2019. I can't really think of anything as such, except we'll have some new devices that are probably quite interesting coming out.
I'm wondering if the Pi 4 is coming out this Pi Day.
Well, okay, there could be a Raspberry Pi. But, I mean, what's going to happen here? Is it going to be the year desktop Linux? No, it's not. Is it going to be the year of mobile Linux taking over Android, which is Linux-based? No, it's not. Things like this, you know. Is Google Chrome going to lose loads of market share to Firefox? Because, you know, no, that's probably not going to happen either.
Oh, this is a very depressing approach to take, I must say.
What predictions?
Oh, it's kind of also pointless. It's all relative. The market share of desktops are decreasing anyway. And yeah, so Linux, it's unlikely that everybody who hasn't switched already to running a Linux desktop are suddenly going to decide this year, hey, let's listen to all those people and put on a desktop. Linux desktop is never going to take over unless you're running Chromebooks. And that's a version of Linux.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Android's a version of Linux. This is what Richard Stallman was saying all the time, that Linux is not GNU Linux, it's Linux. So people ask the question, when is Linux going to take over the desktop? It already has.
Yeah, I agree with that. Desktop, it's around. Well, mobile, it's taken over already by Android. But, like, yeah, think of some predictions of the year. What do you think will happen or might happen? That's what I meant.
Google has done the smart thing with the Chrome OS. He's, while Microsoft has the Linux subsystem for Windows, the most current versions of Chrome OS have the Linux compatibility layer, or whatever you want to call it, for a Linux-based OS, which is an interesting end around people trying to use, like, Kruton to put a full Linux distro on your Chromebook. Google has sort of short-circuited the procedure by saying, well, just run your Linux applications under Chrome OS natively.
Well, of course, you got to take into account that Google's developing their own OS for underlying systems to take over. So, you know, if we say, okay, yeah, it's counting Chromebooks, it is the year of the Linux desktop. Well, how much longer, though, is that going to be true?
Okay, guys, 3 minutes, and this thing is over officially.
And Google Chromebooks can run Android apps, so that's, well, yeah, more than we'll be able to as well. And they've got their own operating system in the works, whatever it was called, F something.
It's going to be interesting to see how the transition goes, just like the...
I mean, OMG Bunter had one of those prediction articles as well, but I mean, Microsoft love Linux now, apparently, and open source, so I guess it could be an interesting year to see what happens when it comes to Microsoft and open source.
Business loves open source at the moment, guys.
I know it's because of that. It's because big enterprise want Linux and open source and a bit of Windows, and they have to play along with that.
And people will follow the money. At the end of the day,
yeah, money, yeah. That's why I say apparently love open source. It only when it's in their business interest.
Well, that is the nature of business, to love whatever is currently making them a profit.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point as well. And yeah, it's got 1 minute to go officially, or something like that, of this. Okay, bye-bye 2018 for the whole world, I guess.
And welcome 290 new slots here on HPR. Yeah.
Yes, we officially owe Ken a show.
2018 is officially in the past for the whole world.
Yeah, crap. I'm going to be writing it on my checks, though, for the next month and a half.
Before you get used to writing it, you mean?
Exactly.
19. Yeah, 19 at the end instead.
Well, I'm officially behind the eight ball because I didn't get myself a new calendar.
I was given a new calendar, and it's better than the one I had last year, as in 2018.
Well, I'm
that's one of those.
Going to have to see if I can get a 2019 Yoga Cats calendar to keep up the tradition.
It's one of those paper things with numbers on it, isn't it?
Yeah, and some photos or images or something to make it look nice.
Now, that's one thing I've noticed. I mean, usually I would acquire by the end of the year, you know, two or three calendars that I would never really use. But there's a bunch of cool pictures. Fine, I'll look at it, you know, long as they're free. But that, you know, I think never occurred to me before, but moving into the digital age, I don't see that many just free, here's a calendar of cool pics of things on it that much anymore.
And then you meant to write on the calendars yourself what's going on, what you're doing, things like that. And, I mean, no, they are sold in the shops here quite well still, but it's a bit old and fashioned in a way, because we've got all this tech now. We've got computer calendars and mobile phone calendars and all that.
Well, that's it. I mean, if somebody develops a paper calendar that updates itself to Google, then somebody might buy that. But I was disappointed. I found out the other day that I've got an Echo device, and supposedly I can actually time the Echo device in the Google Calendar, but so far I've done that, and so far none of my stuff on Google Calendar shows up on my Echo.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I like XFCE. On a sidebar here, I have the numeric date, I have the day of the week, and I have the time in 24-hour format.
Right, okay, but I think but 2 points here. One, you can probably do similar in other interfaces, and two, actually make 3 points. Two, XFCE is mostly in the past, but saying that, so is the interface I'm running at the moment.
Well, I mean, that's nice, but if I'm going to do a calendar, I want to do one central calendar that shows up on all my devices, because, I mean, it's the phone I'm going to be carrying with me that, you know, needs to buzz and go off and remind me of something.
Yeah, I always have Google Calendar capabilities, but I haven't really used it at all.
Is Ken still there, or did he disappear? Yes, he disappeared, doesn't he?
And Honky, did you jump in or not? Well, I guess he's muted, so I guess not.
I think most of the people except U50 are here as audio syncs. They're not actually here as active participants.
Right. Have you guys been here this whole time?
No. No one's been here the whole 26 hours.
Oh, I hope not. No, I didn't mean the whole 26 hours, but since I dropped out, two hours ago.
I dropped out earlier and then got some sleep, it seemed. Well, yeah. And then I was like, actually, this stuff's still open. Let's might as well go on it again for a bit. But,
I got in late to the party, but I've been hanging here except for a brief stop for lunch.
Although we are officially over, so this will be the after show or however it's done now.
Yeah, essentially when we quit talking, I'm not saying that other people aren't welcome to jump in. That was the main reason I got back up, and I didn't really get any sleep, but I got back restless and, you know, kept getting up, doing stuff, trying to go back to bed. And
I did get some sleep, but not really properly, but then I have I'm going out later anyway, it seems. My neighbour and stuff, so flat neighbour, so might as well, you know, do this for a bit and some other things and do that, I guess. But I'm used to being awake at different times anyway. Like Netminer was saying, but for different reasons.
Well, like I was telling Honky earlier today, it was, you know, was it Honky or was it Ken? Whichever it was, it's, you know, maybe it's Ken because he asked me if I normally up that early, and I said, well, it's a bit, you know, I got in a weird sleep cycle of, you know, not being asleep when I should be and sleeping when I shouldn't be or whatever, and
Exactly. Yeah, that happens to me at times. I'm a bit like that at the moment, but then again, I do like the night anyway, and it's mostly night at the moment, but that will change. Hopefully at the end of this month, it'll get, you know, more light.
Yeah, of course, it's still dark. Still got a couple hours of darkness here, so I'm probably going to go.
It's actually day here now, but yeah. What's that? You saying you're going to be here a bit longer, or are you going, what are you saying?
Oh, not much longer.
Yeah, I mean, might stay about 2 hours unless like everyone disappears, but otherwise no. But yeah, that's just but actually, yeah, sleeping, that's a good topic in a way, because once you've, like, you know, let's say you've been up all night a lot and then you're gonna sleep, you know 8 a.m comes, 9 a.m comes, you're still awake, 10 a.m comes, you sleep for a bit, and then you kind of messed up again for the next day. Or you don't sleep enough and you feel tired, but then you'll wake up and then you can be awake for another, you know, 17 hours, 18 hours, 20 hours if you really want. And then you're probably going to sleep again feeling not tired. You go like that as well.
Also, I tend to sleep in like 2 hour chunks.
Well, really, just 2 hours, wake up and then sleep more 2 hours.
Well, yes. And depending on how I feel and in the phase of the moon and what I haven't listened to on whatever I'm following at the moment, I may be up for a couple hours and then crash out. Or when I get myself awake, I'll just stay up until I feel tired again and sort of, you know, swap in and out between sleeping and being active with very little respect for how this links in with the day or night cycle.
Yeah, so are you saying you basically sleep in day or night whenever you feel like it, but only for 2 hours each time, like naps?
Well, I can generally, depending on how tired I am, I will find myself sleeping in 2 hour chunks, and when I surface, I will decide whether I'm going to stay awake or crash back into sleep, and it's usually a coin flip.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that as well. And then sometimes you can, for whatever reason, you know, you've had your, like, you've been awake for, like, let's say 17 hours, 14 hours, 17 hours, 16 hours, 18 hours, maybe even 20 hours, and you look at the time and you think, like, oh, it's like 5 o'clock in the morning, or oh, it's 8 o'clock now in the morning, or it's 7 or 6 or something like that. And you think, like, but I'm wide awake. I feel wide awake, but yet, because I haven't gone to sleep, I haven't had any sleep since whenever, I'm going, you know, you go to sleep, and then you sort of, I don't know if you're like that, you just sort of sleep when you sleep, and then you sleep 5 hours. 6 hours, maybe, probably not 8 hours.
Yes, and sometimes, again, it depends. Sometimes when you're very tired, you'll break free. Well, I have PTSD dreams, but sometimes I will break free of that dream sensorium, and I have to really push myself to go back to sleep.
Anyway, now I'm more like sleep when I sleep, get comfortable enough, and nearly anywhere as well, as long as you're like comfortable enough, and then you sort of sleep. You could doze off to sleep after a little while, but then for not that long or whatever. But yeah, but thing is you can go to sleep at times, like I'm saying, because you sort of feel that you should. Because like day and night cycle or whatever, it just looking at the time and everything. But you're going to bed or you're going to sleep very wide awake, I would say, which is a bit odd in a way. If you get what I mean, you know what I mean.
Well, my trouble is I will do something stupid like get started on a series or something that the whole thing's dropped on Netflix, and binge watch and keep saying, keep thinking, yeah, I'll go to bed at the end of this hour, and then, you know, there'll be a cliffhanger, and okay, yeah, I gotta see the next, you know, and so it's late in the morning, and I, you know, and then literally, like Kenny Rogers said, I get too tired to sleep.
Yeah, well, I find I do a lot of YouTube, and sometimes I do audiobooks on there, and sometimes I listen and stay up, and sometimes I lay down and crash out in the middle. But
do you mean when you say crash out, do you mean like at the computer, yes, in your chair?
Well, if I have an audiobook playing and I have it on the speakers, I can be laying in my bed listening and just hearing it as sort of the background, and then realize that I slept through the last 2 hours of the book.
Yeah. Or we got something on, and then you listen to it, you think, oh, let's listen to this for a bit, and then you just basically doze off to sleep whilst doing that, yeah?
Oh, yeah, I famously fell asleep in my desk chair, and apologies to Dan Fry, who may listen to this. Years ago, I had a house fire, and, you know, he was, at the time, he worked in the IT department of a office furniture company. So he actually had to sent me out a desk and one of these, you know, like $1,000 desk chairs, or, you know, or several hundred dollars, you know, and ergonomic and all that. You just set it, and oh my goodness, it's incredible. And then about a year ago, I fell asleep in it and apparently lost my balance sometime and turned the thing over, and it hit hard enough to break stuff. I still need to take it apart and, like, you know, glue the plastic back together and, you know, bend the metal parts back into shape. You know, it's I don't think it's unrecoverable, but I just haven't got around to it.
I suppose that's the one thing with sleeping in that case as well, yeah. If you sleep in, let's say, the wrong place sometimes, like you've done it, so it sounds like, potentially you're going to fall out of that chair or whatever, it's going to break something and all this, but I've not had that problem myself, but it sounds like you have. Because when you're asleep, you don't have any control, you're asleep, basically. You don't know what's going on.
Well, one of the most frightening situations I found myself in some years ago was I had what I think they call sleep paralysis, where my mind was awake but my body was still shut down. So your mind is going a million miles a minute, but all of the inputs are turned off, and that can be quite uncomfortable.
Oh, well, so like it's like you're sleeping, your body is, but the mind is awake. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, your body, most of the time in sleep, there's a mechanism that when you fall asleep, your body is sort of disconnected, so you don't hurt yourself, you know, falling out of bed or what have you. But sometimes your mind can be moving while that mechanism is, you know, steps on the clutch and disconnects your body from its motor systems and its inputs, so all your mind gets is basically mental noise and is trying to make sense of things, and nothing's really, you know, nothing's happening, and, you know, your body, because it's shut down by the sleep systems, feels very strange to a mind who's used to driving it. I don't know if I'm expressing myself clearly, but it is a very eerie feeling.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't sound very nice, but I think I understand what you're saying. And, I mean, you got to watch out because it might, no, I don't know, if maybe something like that will happen. Actually, how many times does that happen?
I think it's only happened once or twice some many years ago, but...
Okay, so yeah, probably not tonight for you then, after this.
Not after this, although I may crash out rather deeply, but again, I will usually go through some kind of hour or 2 hour sleep cycle.
Yeah.
Of course, sometimes...
Although
waking is just to do a restroom break and then crash back.
Well, no, 2 hours constantly sleep cycles is maybe not the best thing, really.
Also, I tend to have, or seem to have, very active dream cycles, so even when I'm sleeping, I'm not exactly rested.
What kind of dreams? Oh, yeah.
Different kinds, oftentimes flying or driving, neither of which I am licensed to do, but I often have that. I often have dreams about being in where my grandmother's farm in Maine, where I was at home.
Actually, you know what? Turns out you're asleep right now. This is not actually happening. It's a dream, and you're dreaming about 5150 as well.
Well, 50, sorry, but usually... I try to scrounge up somebody.
Is he actually here? It seems he disappeared as well. 5150, wake up.
Mr. Gwynn, car 54, where are you?
Maybe he's not with us anymore, and he's got some sleep.
Sleep? Macbeth has murdered sleep.
Maybe talking about sleep actually made him go to sleep.
Well, perhaps he was the one with the Irish coffee, or the Irish at least.
Right, yeah, that could be end of him until next time or whenever, but yeah. Yeah, I don't know, 2 hour sleep cycle doesn't sound very good though, but it sounds like what, is that like 4 or 5 times in, say, a 24-hour day, or what do you mean?
Well, I will maybe sleep 2 or 3 two-hour chunks and then be up for... an indefinite period, and then go back to two or three two-hour chunks.
Right, so the being awake could be 20 hours, 17 hours, 14 hours, basically, and then you sleep for 2 hours, and then off you go again.
And also, like if I'm doing something like writing or YouTubing or whatnot, even when I lay down, I'm not relaxed, so... I can lay there and for a while, and then I'll get up and do a little more YouTube or something, or, you know.
Yeah, and then you get the... I'm feeling a bit like that at the moment, but, like, you've slept, but you haven't really slept properly, so you kind of wake up, but you sort of feel tired. You get that as well at times, I guess.
Yeah, well, also there's the times when you're laying down and you're trying to shut down, but your mind is just dieseling on. You know, I don't feel like shutting down, so I ain't going to, no matter, just because you've laid down doesn't mean I'm going to turn myself off.
Yeah, I suppose. Oh, he's come back from his nap, I think. I saw a light up. We were just thinking you'd fallen off to sleep with all the sleep talk, 5150.
No, I was playing over in the browser, and I was looking at one of my browser tabs saying, oh, what's that I have open there, and clicked on it, and I probably need to restart Firefox, but well, I said, this particular machine I mentioned earlier this evening, it just seems to slip through a memory hole in time and space, and it's got 4 gig of RAM. There's no reason it should for what I'm doing with it, but. Yeah, that was a problem. All of a sudden, the whole system just nearly locked.
Yeah, because, I mean, you were probably on something that I don't know if you should talk about an HPR. And so, yeah.
Well, I have so many. I have so many Firefoxes open, it's not even funny, and there are multiple tabs on each one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take this thing back to bare metal and try a different version of Linux on it. You know, I try to change the desktop, and that's not a big enough change. But I don't could be a faulty memory module. I don't know, but it is not performing. I got this essentially just to see off of eBay. You know, I've got the Pine Book, which is essentially sub-$100 computer. Of course, by the time I added every single accessory to it, it cost cost more than that.
The Pine Book, I saw one of those in November. That was finally, and it's kind of interesting. I also saw the Slim Book, or briefly the KDE Slim Book thing. But yeah, the Pine Book, I was going to order one of those. I mean, you said accessories. What kind of accessories?
Oh, Ethernet adapter and increased storage. And, what else? There was something else externally plugged in. But, I use the Pine Book for my travel computer. It is fine for that. The speakers are not fit for purpose. If you want to listen, I mean, yeah, if you turn them all the way up in a quiet room and it's, you know, but it's like straining your eyesight. You're straining your ears, you know, to hear anything. So, but, you know, maybe if you're traveling, you're going to use earbuds or something anyway, or maybe a set of travel speakers. That's the first thing. The speakers are absolutely, and of course they're it's a $100 computer, and it's got the same aspect of like a it's as thin as the thinnest of the Apple
It's laptop. It's a cheap computer, meant to be cheap, but like having Raspberry Pi in it, I guess, as opposed to the Pine board instead, Pi 64. And also, is it the 14-inch you've got, or the 11.6? Because apparently the 11.6 isn't really made anymore. Inch.
Yeah, I've got the 14. I've got the 14-inch, and next thing is the trackpad is pretty horrible. At least it works. I mean, the speakers, like I said, the speakers are absolutely not fit for purpose. The trackpad is uncomfortable to you. You know, it's a pain in the butt to use, but at least it works.
It's supposed to be like a secondary laptop. That's the idea, I think. Like, you wouldn't use that as your main laptop, or probably not.
No, but it's a great light thing to throw in your luggage when you're traveling, or I could definitely see using that as a consultant, as a work computer. The main thing is, and I don't know, maybe somebody's educated the TSA, but this is what I take with me on airplanes to go into Linux Fest, and they, you know, whenever this thing goes through X-ray, it's like 90% hollow. There's like two little boards stacked on top of each other, which are, electronically, they're equivalent to a Pine 64, because you can use a Pine 64 image. You go over there and you look at the Pine box, there's not as many images, but Door-to-Door Geek found out that you could, any of the images for the Pine 64 also work on the Pine Book. So electronically, it's completely compatible. And I did ask about a year ago, hey, are there going to be any upgrades for the boards? You know, are you going to put the Rock chip in a new Pine Book? And they told me at the time, that's coming.
But you said something about TSA. So you're saying they scan it and it goes through, it looks okay enough, or it doesn't?
Well, no, they're used to they're not used to seeing big hollow spaces in your laptop.
So they want to look at it out of the bag, do they? Or normally?
Yes, every time the first few years. In fact, last year I had one lady come up to me and said, you know, put her hands on her hips and saying, sir, are you aware that your laptop is hollow? And I said, yes, it's an ARM processor and it's got all that it needs.
Yeah, I had with like the pocket chip as well, which I've got one of those. I think you might have one of those actually. We got pocket chip as well, yeah?
Yes, I do.
I need to reflash it.
I screwed it up. Yeah,
I think I might have a piece missing off mine. I'm not sure now. Or that was part of the casing. But anyway, I heard somebody say that, yeah, something like that. You take that to an airport, and there's a chance that, again, the security are going to be like, oh, what's this for a thing?
I've brought pies or similar things through TSA and not had a problem. I think they're getting used to it, you know, looking at stuff. I know I've brought home like electronics kits and Arduinos and stuff that have been, you'll go to a conference and you go to the one, you know, a thing on soldering or, you know, whatever, and they actually give you the board, which is a great deal.
And I guess with certain airports, they're near enough to these conferences, and so there's going to be loads of people going in suddenly on certain days with these devices, and then be like, oh, okay, yeah.
I don't know if they know that, but I mean, even coming back last year, was it from Seattle? They're starting to say, no, don't bother taking off your shoes. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, we're on yours. There's also a thing about you meant to take your laptop out and all that, or so they say, but I think I read somewhere or whatever that you don't necessarily have to take your, like, mini PCs out and your phones even, because of how... But you meant to take your laptop out still because it's bigger or something like that.
Yeah, you know, phones they don't look at, laptops they do. You know, well, like the one lady who, you know, said, you know, was on me, do you know your laptop's hollow? I mean, I've had them give me the stink eye and look at the laptop, and yeah, we got to look at that closer. And that, you know, they do all the wipe tests to make sure there's no explosives or drugs or whatever in it, I guess. But, but that was the first one that actually directly confronted me. I kind of lost my train of thought.
Isn't that mine still there?
Yes, I'm just drooling over my next server machine.
That's going to be hollow as well, yeah. And small, so you can go through TSA with that as well.
Well, I don't fly, but I've been running this i5 2400 laptop here, and its screen gave out. And I was just wondering what if I went to an i5... desktop quad core, how much more performance I would be getting.
Oh, that's what I was going to say about the Pinebook, and apparently everybody's mileage varies. When the battery's fully charged, I get a pretty strong battery life out of it. But mine, just sitting, you know, if it sits for 48 hours, it'll discharge just sitting by itself, not on, even from a full charge. And luckily, before I got on this flight, this is the outbound leg, so I charged it sitting at home. Otherwise, I may have had a problem because, you know, I wouldn't have been able to turn it on and show them that it was working.
Oh, you mean you had it charged at home so you could turn it on at the airport?
Exactly. You know, most laptops you wouldn't really have that problem. You know, you charge them up, they stay charged. This, you know, no. Pretty much at home, I leave it plugged in all the time.
So the battery gone.
And like I said, it's got good battery life once, you know, from a full charge. But for some reason, and like I said, I know a lot of people with them. I think I know one other person who said they have that same problem. Everybody else says, we don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, laptops and batteries. I mean, I've had problems with this laptop recently and the battery. So, like, I had it opened up, and then it was like, somebody said, like, oh, somebody said it could be the CMOS battery, and it's like, no, the CMOS is joined with the main battery or something, and it basically says online to take your battery out and put it back in again. That's meant to at least temporarily fix it. And annoyingly, because it's a newer laptop, you have to unscrew to even get into the battery, whereas the old ones, you just tuck it out. And then this was done about 3 or 4 times. And it basically wouldn't charge from a flat battery. And it might still have this problem now. I don't know quite. I don't want to let go down as far as that. And it has done, I think, once or twice since. And I think it was okay the last 2 times. But basically, my battery could be on the verge of going out as well because laptop's from June 2015. But yeah, it's annoying. You have to unscrew to get into these batteries now. Whereas in the past, you just took it out of the back and that was that.
Wouldn't happen to be a Dell. I've noticed more problems. You know, Dells have software that tell it that the battery's down. And I've had them show.
Well, it's a HP, and also had the whole UEFI issue, which I talked about earlier. But yeah, I've had quite a few issues with this laptop already from day one, overheating, and then motherboard failing, and the UEFI issues. And later on, because of a new motherboard, and then the battery issue. But when it works, when it works, it's a nice enough laptop. It's got a touch screen, which admittedly I hardly ever actually use. It's a nice enough size for 13 inch or something like that. But yeah, the battery stuff is not what you want either. But to be honest, after the issues I've had with this laptop, that's basically it. I intend to never buy HP ever again. I don't want to buy Dell. I don't want to buy Acer. I don't want to buy Lenovo. I don't want to buy any of this stuff because, you know what? One, there are other devices that are much more, more interesting anyway now. Things like you could put the Pinebook in that even. Slimbook, which is another laptop anyway, but the mobile devices, the pocket chip, the GPUs, you know, there's all kinds of things now. I don't need a standard laptop as much anyway, so I keep this one going. And if I want to buy a new laptop or want to have money for this, I would, which I don't at the moment, I really don't, but I would look more seriously again at Entroware or something like that. We've got Entroware in the UK, a Linux, Linux laptop company, Linux only company, and there's more options in America, I think, System 76 and all that, but you know, it probably would be worth to pay a bit more and get something with Linux pre-installed already. And HP and all this, they just only support Windows anyway properly, so why give money to them? Why bother with them? Oh, because it's a brand. Well, yeah, but then my motherboard comes back, it's meant to be replaced, and I can't even dual boot with Linux to begin with because of the problems I ended up with. I was talking about that earlier.
Yeah, if I were going to buy new, I would buy ThinkGeek or System 76, but I'm always buying used junk and then installing Linux on. I mean, this laptop here in front of me, case in point. It was time to experiment. Yeah, I said, okay. Like I said, I was comparing that to the Pinebook, and I said, okay, if I give myself $75 to spend, if I go on eBay, can I find a laptop that is arguably, you know, more powerful than the Pinebook? And this is a dual core AMD from a few years ago, 17 inch desktop replacement laptop. I did have to throw a little memory in it, but still cheap, you know, cheaper than what I spent on the Pinebook, but not nearly as convenient. You know, I'd be a lot more worried if I were just to throw this in my carry-on that it would get broke because it's, you know, it's bigger, it's bulkier, it's heavier, and probably more fragile than the Pinebook. I mean, the Pinebook, because it is hollow, as I have mentioned, you know, even though that you can grab the two corners and twist it a bit, you know, there it's not like there's a full-length board you know, running through the thing that's going to break.
Yeah, I guess. But you didn't. I don't think you got the Pine Book secondhand, though, that you probably bought new.
No, of course I bought the Pine Book new.
Yeah, can you hear me?
And, like, you know, I think we've established with my lust for the GPDs and stuff, I am a sucker for, you know, compact computers. You know, maybe not so enough to spend $500-$600 on one, but definitely I look at that and that, you know, looking at the, yeah, I want that a lot more than I, you know, want a big, heavy 17-inch luggable computer.
Right, Mumble crashed again, I think. I mean, it's had problem. This is the third time with a problem with that, I think. But it does seem to stay up without issues for quite a long time. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can be heard very well.
Yeah, that's what everyone keeps on saying with this headset as well. I didn't even have to see the wizard tickly, just put it on 10ms or whatever I did and left the rest, and it seems to be working good. It's a bit annoying to have to do the mumble wizard every time you open up again, as somebody said earlier.
I think that was Honky, I'm pretty sure, said that.
I have had that problem before.
The wizard always comes up, yeah.
Yeah, a couple Linux Lugcasts ago, when I'd first got this set up, it took, that might remember, it took me a while to get connected, because everything looked, you know, I hadn't tried Mumble before. Well, I should say I dropped a new Linux on it, bare metal, and installed Mumble, and then, of course, you got to get everything lined up in every part. So you got to go to, and then of course, you got to get everything lined up in every part. So you got to go to, Pulse Audio, and you know, if you've got more than one output device like I do, I've got built-in speakers and microphone, and then USB headset. Get that set. And it looked like I had that set up, and you know, I couldn't hear and I couldn't talk, and finally went through the Mumble setup and got everything working that week. And I thought I was going to have to, oh man, we'll do that every week. But the next week it just worked. So
this, yeah, I mean, here it, for this time for me, it just said default input or whatever. And I was like, no, select the USB headset for those. And it's just working great. And this headset is actually new as well. So yeah.
And completely on my end, I'm sure, because nobody mentioned it, but Seb, about three times for you this evening and once for Netminer, you know, it's been like a broken record. You know, it repeats the last thing you say, and it's like, you know, about seven times in, you know, do I need to kill Mumble? And then finally it comes back.
When it crashes, or what do you mean?
Well, you know, whatever you were saying, it will just repeat, you know, repeat the last two words or whatever four or five times.
What, Mumble will do that, you mean?
Well, it did it for me tonight. I've had it before on a bad connection, but, you know, like I said, it just happened to be you, you know, like three times, and I think Netminer once, but nobody else said anything about it, so I figured, well, right, that's just my end.
I don't know. I've had Mumble crash or have a problem, I think, three times, like just now as well, and also there was somebody on earlier when it started repeating them, and somebody said it wasn't me, it was them, so when it was, like, repeating what they were saying, yeah, that's happened. Yeah, I think that's happened about three times with other people.
No, that's a different thing. That's feedback when somebody has their mic open.
So 1111111111. Okay, that was me repeating that. That was actually me, right? But no, it shouldn't really repeat what I'm saying ever. So I guess it's a problem with the connection or Mumble or whatever, because it's tech. At the end of the day, it's not perfect, is it?
Nope, it never is. Cool thing, sometimes there will be a thing and some sort of momentary glitch, and it's like Mumble tries to buffer everything you've missed. So all of a sudden, somebody, you know, whoever was talking to me really speeded up so I could hear everything that I missed.
Yeah, yeah. So like I was saying, though, tech is not perfect, right? And I'm in basically a flat blocks now, and of course we have a lift, and the building is a year and a bit old now, really. It's still quite new, and that lift has, I think, always worked so far. But you know, you have the like alarm button, it's broke down and all this, and I'm thinking, like, you know, one day that lift is going to break down, and potentially I'm going to be in that lift when it happens. Hopefully not when I'm trying to go to Brussels at the end of this month to go get off to Fosdam, right? Going down with a suitcase, probably. And then you've got your taxi and you're going to get picked up or whatever. But I was thinking, like, you know, it could happen. There's a chance. So, like, New Year, I don't want to be stuck in the lift. I'll just keep out of the lift and go to the stairs just in case. I mean, it's probably fine. I could go in the lift. But there's that chance it's going to break down at some stage because it's tech. I remember talking to somebody about who worked on lifts, and he said, you know, it's very unlikely a lift will... I think you say elevator there, actually. A lift is unlikely to go break down. But, you know, there's a chance, isn't there? You don't want to be stuck in the lift or elevator, I think you say there, don't you? Not the moving stairs, the lift, yeah.
Yeah.
Moving
stairs is escalator.
Yeah, yeah. So escalator is moving stairs, and I'm talking about the lift. We call say lift here, but you would say elevator.
Yeah, I would think a new one would be fairly reliable. The ones that would bother me, you see in the movies or something. I never really got in one. The old ones that used to have to have an operator run it. You know, but you'll see them in movies and apartment buildings, you know, that are old enough to still have that same tech, and you know, you got to run it yourself.
Well, yeah, the new one should be reliable, or for the most part, but there's still that chance it's going to go wrong one day.
Well, I've got an elevator story from the building of the Empire State Building.
Hey, right, what's that?
Well, the Empire State Building has, as one might suspect, Otis Elevators in it, being the big elevator company in the U.S. But they got into a little hot water because the elevator in the thresholds or door frames have the word Otis. And part of the contract of anyone contracting with the Empire State Building construction company was that no brand names were supposed to be visible without approval by the Empire, by the organization who was building the building. So Otis had to make special nameless thresholds or whatever framing for the Empire State Building elevators because they put in their standard, this is an Otis elevator badging.
Right, yeah, interesting. So I think I'll stay here for, like, strictly, I'm going to say, 1 hour or about 1 hour because it will then become 2 o'clock in the afternoon here. Wow, yeah, afternoon. And I can do some other things and then should be going out a bit later, I think, with someone, neighbor, apparently. I want to do some other things first before that as well. Shipping actually happens this time because the other day it didn't. Yeah. Yeah, another hour, I think, and then do some other things. That's what I'm saying, basically.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know this. I keep meaning to do an HPR on it and haven't got around to it. I collect old rotary telephones and have all of mine connected up actually to my Google Voice number through various boxes and stuff. And So they're all voice over IP phones, but one of them I have is an old elevator phone. You know, in the old days, you had that panel you opened up if you got into trouble, and there was a phone. I don't know why they made them old rotary phones, because I'm sure they weren't hooked up so you could just call whoever you wanted long distance as long as you were in an elevator. but you know, you would think it'd be a phone with a button on it to call whoever you need to call and tell them, yeah, I'm stuck in the elevator, come help me.
Oh, I know why you have a dial.
Oh, actually, I'm going to say something else, but go first.
Dial allows you to generate pulses which would cause somebody to ring.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Just pick up the handset, you're basically breaking squelch, or breaking the dial tone, but you're not making an active system.
I would think, though, they'd just give you a capacitor and a hand crank, like the old wooden phones.
Well, actually, that's probably something, yes, but dial mechanisms were ubiquitous at the time of dial phone.
Well, that's one of the stories I was going to include, because a lot of the phones I have are automatic electric, and that they, not AT&T, actually developed automatic, dialing system with the, they developed the rotary phone, and they tried to sell it to AT&T, and AT&T says, we're not interested. And then there was a strike by operators in about 1915, and AT&T came over and said, yeah, let's talk about licensing this tech, what you have.
Right, hang on a second, right? It seems we moved on to phones for some reason, but I wanted to say something about lifts quickly, I'm on the third floor, basically, and if that lift breaks down by a minute one day, I've thought of this before a few times, but you're going to feel like, oh, if only I'd tuck the stairs. Why did I not take the stairs? Why did I go in the lift? It'd be so annoying. You know what I mean? In a building where you could take the stairs most of the time anyway, even if you got something heavier, well, not always, but...
Oh, yeah, I can definitely...
Excuse me, is that third floor American or third floor European?
Well, I say third floor, but it's like the ground floor is known as zero, right? And then you got a floor above that, which is known as number one. And then you got this floor, which is known as number two.
Oh, I never knew that. That's thank you, Netminer. That's new info for me.
I don't know if it's American or European, but I know that some buildings have the ground floor is known as zero, and then might even have a basement or something that go like minus zero, and that could be here or in Europe even. It's a three floor building, really. I'm on the roof floor, basically, with another flat as well, which is very nice, actually. No neighbours, except for one.
Now, in Europe, do you guys still skip the 13th floor like we do?
Wait, 13th floor? Most buildings aren't, except for some hotels, I suppose, aren't as big as that anyway. They went,
Well, even over here, there's not
and some office blocks,
a huge
possibly.
Amount of buildings.
Yeah, and some office blocks have probably got like 13 floors as well, that's true. I don't think it's skipped here, but I don't know quite. Maybe it's skipped because it's unlucky, yeah? Number 13.
Yeah, that's exactly what.
Especially if the government owes you a bunch of money.
Well, it was 51-50, was it? You said, yeah, that's why it skips, is that what you said?
Yes, because 13 is considered an unlucky number. That's exactly why it skipped.
What, so like 13 becomes 14 instead, or what?
Exactly that, yes.
Really, they do that over there. I didn't know they did that. But Friday the 13th is more of a thing, isn't it?
Especially.
Oh, I'm not sure anybody actually.
If the French government owes you a bunch of money, watch it.
Well, why?
Well, the King of France on a certain Friday the 13th decided that if he could accuse the Templars of all sorts of ghastly things, he wouldn't have to pay him what he owed them.
I think France owe 51-50 some money.
Oh. Yeah, well, that's what Friday the 13th is all about, is the destruction of the Templar Order.
Really? Is it? I thought it was just because, teenagers becoming 13 and things like that.
Well, if you follow the Jewish tradition, 13, I believe, is when the Bar Mitzvah and the Bat Mitzvah is done. Hebrew adulterer.
Yeah, that minor you.
Oh yeah, no.
That minor you are just
Those Friday the 13th movies are not particularly good as well.
I was going to say, that minor you are just a font of information and not just technical.
Yeah, but some of it might be wrong for all we know. You have to check it on Google and Wikipedia, except Wikipedia can be wrong as well, as can things on Google. Actually, Wikipedia, I'll tell you something about Wikipedia, and it's really, really annoying me now, in fact, because you might get these emails yourself, I don't know, but I'm sure maybe some of the people who are going to listen to this, they actually listen to this, get these emails, and know what I'm going to say now. I had like a thing pop up on Wikipedia itself, like four years ago or something, and it was like, use Wikipedia, come donate to us. Why don't you donate to us? You seem to use Wikipedia, and I thought, well, yeah, I use it quite a bit. I got more money at this. I had more money at that time for that this kind of thing. Anyway, I don't now, and I was like, okay, I'll donate £30 to Wikipedia because I can. And I had somebody else in my Linux user group had done the same thing. They donated about £30 I think as well. But then every year ever since, I'm getting these emails that are apparently from Jimmy Wales, who the founder of Wikipedia, and it basically is nagging to donate money again. And every year it happens like twice or maybe three times. And I think somebody said that, no, they have enough money anyway, so basically spam in a way. And then you get like, this is my last final call, you donated back in 2014 or whatever, why don't you donate again, and all this, and it's just really annoying. It's basically nagged to donate again, and you can go onto Wikipedia as well, and you get these things popping up saying like, you use Wikipedia, so why don't you donate to us?
Yeah, and it's there's the old English saying, you know, if you pay the Dane Geld, you don't get rid of the Dane.
Well, if you pay up, they don't let you go. They nag you to pay again. Is that what you mean? Or
yes, it's also it's the general fallacy of paying a ransom that can be made recurring.
Yeah, but it's like begging for money.
Well, that's like anything. Any cause you contribute to on the internet, you know, they've got your email address. You know, they're going to come back and hit you up again. And things like Wikipedia and archive.org, I don't really mind. I don't always respond, but occasionally I do, especially when they say, yeah, we've got the sweetheart deal where we've got somebody that's going to triple your donation or whatever. That's more an archive.org deal. I think they run every year. Like if you contribute $25, we've got this angel contributor who will contribute $75.
FSF is another one. It's like, you know, I used to have an FSF membership, and then either an email or the news bulletin, it comes, well, that's not so bad with the FSF, to be fair, but, you know, it's very much like, you were a member back in 2014 of the FSF, why don't you sign up again?
And, Seb, this is probably something completely alien to you. What's even worse, if you ever shop for a gun online?
This is something, well, you don't do that here, basically, or usually not. America you might do, I suppose, but that's what you meant by alien, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, any firearm site that you visit, remembers, you know, sign up for, you know, is pretty much going to show up in your email once a week, if not more often.
Yeah, I haven't used it, but I really need to figure out plus addressing on Gmail.
Okay, well, what are you saying? The site will pop up saying, come buy from me again. Is that what you meant?
Oh, yeah. I've,
you get a lifetime supply of spam.
I probably get 5-10 emails a day.
You say a lifetime supply of spam, except then you potentially get shot by that gun anyway. So, yeah.
Actually, there is a method where you can add a plus sign, I think, on Gmail, so that you can give the provider a legitimate address, but it's already flagged with something that's designed to make filtering easy.
I know it's HPR and some people like talking about guns, which I wouldn't normally do or bother with that discussion. However, I'm going to ask a question now because I just thought of something. What guns have you two got?
I've got no functional firearms at the moment.
Yeah, that's not something and, you know, I get something I go brag about to my friends, but it's probably, you know, not something you want to create a list for online. Now, of course, all mine are legitimate. You know, the government already knows what I have. So the other thing would be, you know, maybe not go out there and try to create a list for thieves. But in general, I got started three or four years ago. And I wasn't something I was looking for because not really practical for self-defense. But the price, you know, the price point, Italian reproduction of a Peacemaker Colt. And that got me started, you know, really being interested in the vintage single action firearms, single action revolvers. And like I said, this is not, you know, these are for fun. They are not probably the first thing I would want to pick up for home or self-defense or carrying or whatever. And I'd got down to if you wanted to buy every version out there of a Model 75 Peacemaker, yeah, there's probably 50 of them. But I mean, if you're picking from, you know, one from every different gun, you know, a Remington, a Peacemaker, a Bisley, there's really only about six out there. And the last one that I hadn't got is a Smith & Wesson break action revolver. And the reproduction of those go for about $1,100. So I started looking around and saying, you know, I could probably get an actual 100-year-old Colt for that kind of money. And I did that last year. So, you know, if you're asking the kinds of things I'm interested in, Seb, that gives you a pretty good rundown.
50, do you know what a Bass 44 is?
Pretty sure I've heard that before.
It's mentioned in, what's that guy's, I can picture his face. The old country singer's Mr. Shorty.
Oh, I'm drawing a blank on that.
I think it was a small-handled, short-barreled, probably 44-40 revolver.
Yeah, it could be, though there were a lot of percussion 44s as well.
Well, I think this was in the cartridge era. Marty Robbins sings about it. I always thought it was a bad 44, but somebody said it was a Bass 44.
Okay, and there were also, I think they were both 44-40s, but there was like the not the Winchester, but the gun the Winchester was made after. But you know, the original 44s were rim fires, not center fires. And now we've just put Seb to sleep.
No, not quite. But I'm going to go in about 40 minutes because I've got other things to do today. But, I mean, if you want to chat about guns a bit later, go ahead. But, I don't know what else we can talk about anyway.
Okay, Henry, that's what I was thinking. I just wanted to say, the Henry rifle, when it came out, the financial backer was always Winchester. And then when it became successful and popular, you know, the second version that came out, they we'll wipe him, the guy who designed the rifle, we'll wipe him, Henry, out, and we'll call it the Winchester. And the difference being, you know, you've got the side gate loading on the Winchester, and on the Henry, you opened up the tube and loaded it from the bottom. There's proponents for both. But still, as an homage to Henry, if you buy Winchester ammo, there's an eight stepped on the back of it.
Yeah, I've found the lyrics or a page that talks about that Marty Robbins song, 50, it's Smith & Wesson number 3 new model Russian with a 4-inch barrel. Small round butt.
And that's the one I don't have that I was just talking about that's $1,100. You know, there were two Model 3s. There was one that had the Russian model, which is a single action, but it looks more like a double action grip. And then, you have the Schofield, which is essentially the same gun with more Western grip on it.
But modern Schofield reproductions are in 44 Colt, right? 45 Colt.
Yes, and originally it would have been 44-40 or 45 Schofield, which is slightly shorter. But of course, you could still get those, I guess. Watched the video of Hickok 45 the other day. He had some 45 Schofield ammo. But yeah, almost everything like that has been rechambered for 45 long Colt.
So is it only 7 o'clock in the morning for you two?
Yep, 7:20, or 22.
Well, nearly, yeah.
50's in Kansas Central Time, I'm Eastern Time, so it's nearly 8:30.
Is that right? Let's see, 5 hours, 6, 7? Yeah, I guess so. Because it's coming up to 2 here. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I've got 2 clocks on my desktop, and one of them I set yesterday to UTC, so shows me 13:23 in 24-hour time, so, which you already know.
Yes, time here. 13:23.
I'm going to have to pick up a couple of clocks, and one of them that I will have to set to UTC.
Why do you want a clock on UTC?
It's going to be supporting my radio habit.
What? Ham radio?
International radio, yeah.
What do you do with that?
Well, I'm going to be talking about, I'm going to be getting a software-defined radio, and some of the channels are going to be aircraft, which some stuff is Zulu, and a lot of it's going to be shortwave, which is largely Zulu-based.
What do you mean Zulu? What's that?
Zulu is what Americans and our military calls UTC.
Oh, right. Well then, to add into the facts, which you might know already or not, I'll do 2 things. So, UTC or 000, yeah, in the time zone stuff, is also called, you know what it's also called?
Greenwich Mean Time?
Yeah, Greenwich Mean Time. Yeah, that's the correct answer. And then, you know what the summer time's called when it changed, the clocks go forward? Kind of gave away now, actually. British summer time, right? But then what I find interesting as well is this, which you may or may not know, because we went to Iceland in May 2015, right? So the clocks had already changed here for summer time, gone forward the hour. But because Iceland stays on UTC all year, basically, we went back an hour just because of the time zone change, because of the summertime. And at the moment, obviously, it's the same time because it's on winter time. And also, America changes a week earlier, I think, for both of those. Something like that.
Yeah, we change our time in March and first weekend in November now.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Yeah, so in March, America goes forward an hour first, I think, or the other way around, and then the other one is, so it becomes like 4 hours behind instead of 5 hours.
Well, it used to be the solstices, and I think that changed under Bush number two, did a little earlier and a little later. Also, we had 1 year under Jimmy Carter that he decided it would, you know, we wanted to do summertime all year round. And then he got criticized, probably unfairly, because kids got run over waiting for school buses a couple times during that winter because it was so dark. So, you know, the Conservative Party was looking for a reason to call Jimmy Carter a child killer. So they found that. But back in the old days, during the 30s, when it first came through, you'll probably find this under entertaining, Seb. The old folks called regular time God's time, and daylight savings time Roosevelt time. Or not. Maybe it wasn't a funny story.
I can believe that. Also, supposedly deep under New York City, there is a couple of very special cars that hold President Roosevelt's limousine.
Yeah, I love like those videos on YouTube where they go down and see stuff like that. Well, it's like the special stop at the Ritz Hotel. There used to be for celebrities and for presidents and stuff a subway stop that you know, right under the Ritz Hotel. And you know, and then you will see some of the unused subway platforms, and they are just so incredibly ornate. And there's a lot of stuff in Europe. You know, I've seen YouTube stuff, and it's just like, you know, they parked all their old crap in the tunnels. So, you know, people have gone down there, and you know, there's all these vintage subway cars from the 30s and trains. But also there's just regular cars, you know, for some reason parked down there.
Well, one of the big things that they found was a whole bunch of cars that had been put in underground to keep them out of the hands of the Germans.
And there's a YouTube channel, I think is Exploring with the Fighters. But apparently there's this crevasse in England that people, I don't know, for 50 years, people used just to throw their garbage in. So, like, at the bottom of it, you know, if you can get down to it through some, you know, there's caves, and then it could connect to mines, and you'd finally get down there, and it's kind of sketchy. But, I mean, there is this, like, 70-foot pile of old cars that people just, you know, to get rid of their old cars, they just pushed them through this big crevasse hole in the ground.
Yeah, and they're, I think in some of the slate mines during the war, well, they started in World War One, but in World War Two, they took some of the slate mines and said, gee, these are nice, deep underground, protected, nobody can bomb them tunnels, so let's fill them with all kinds of ordnance, including bombs. Well, one fine day, somebody was having a little trouble with this bomb, removing a stuck fuse or fuse plug. So this genius taps it with a brass drift, and Mr. Bomb decides he doesn't like that. And he goes off, and his buddies go off, and there's this huge mushroom cloud coming out of the hillside where all these bombs used to be stored, and where they decided they didn't want to be stored no more.
And there's the World War One movie that I think is fairly accurate, Under a Hill, whatever it was, you know, where you know the really interesting stories, you know, the tunnelers and the counter tunnelers, and you know, they tunneled under enemy lines and you know, stacked up a whole bunch of TNT.
Oh yeah. Also, one of the British shows, they dug out a German flamethrower emplacement, and at one time the German flamethrower was a monstrous construction. It had, you know, fuel tanks and nozzles and stuff, and had a bunker for the crew and stuff like that. but evidently this one was in an area that the Germans basically just got it in place when it was overrun.
Well, you know, I'm a big aficionado of, you know, desperation weapons, and you know, World War II, I don't think they're ever used more than a couple times, but I mean the big cannon pointed at London or where, you know, and you had the various charges that would go off in stages behind the shell.
Oh, I think that gun was never completed. It's the same on the same style as the big super gun which they tried to construct for Saddam Hussein. It was using the same sort of principles.
Yeah, you may be right. It may never have been used. And then they wanted to build a tank with like a battleship turret on top of it, this huge, huge tank, which would have fallen through any road available in the day. And the whole thing's crashed because, we can't build engines for that. I mean, they could, but it would have been taking so much resources that they didn't.
Well, they did have a couple of experimentals, which the Germans called the Maus, which meant mouse, which was like 80 tons.
Yeah, they did have experimental mouses, and it had the same failure. You know, you had to put like ship diesels in it, and that, you know, they didn't have, you know, probably smartly enough, they didn't, you know, they didn't commit the diesels big enough to actually make the project work. But I was thinking of the Rat, you know, which they never did build, but
there was going to be some that were multiple hundred ton. Even Porsche's running gear, which made the Ferdinand and soon to be called the Elephant, as in White Elephant, was a rotten idea.
Well, I mean, even unless under perfect conditions, even the Tiger was too big.
Also, well, you see a lot of those Germans with their interleaved road wheels.
Right, and that was an American design.
Well, I don't know about that, but I think you're talking about the Christie suspension, like on the T-34. But the interleaved road wheels was a great engineering solution. Well, but you've dealt with enough frozen mud to appreciate what that would be like if you got mud between those things.
Right, and I'm always interested in the design, you know, tracks driven from the rear versus driven from the front, because driven from the front, you've got to run that whole drivetrain from the engine in the back of the tank to the front. But the whole reason they did that, which most people don't know, is that if you have your drive sprocket in the back, then all your mud and stuff that is stuck to the treads, you know, runs over that sprocket and wears it out. Whereas if you put it in the front, all that stuff is falling off. By the time the track gets, you know, goes over the top and runs through that track. But it's, you know, the trade-off is you're running the whole drivetrain the length of the tank rear to forward.
Well, also with front drive sprockets, oftentimes they put the transmission up there near the driver, so the linkages would be short.
Well, that's true.
But the real dog was the First World War tanks, where they didn't have good. The exhaust was dumped into the crew compartment.
Oh yeah, and then you had an uncovered drive shaft spinning, and guys would get their legs caught in that. I mean, you know, probably serving in a World War II tank was no treat. But you know, and I'm not sure even about current tanks, though. I rather imagine M60 has some kind of air conditioning or whatever. But yeah, the World War I guys, you know, they were driving those things around in their skivvies because they were so hot.
Yeah, well, yeah, a lot of stuff. One of the things that I find laughable is the on the M3 League/grant, they had a stabilization system for the upper turret, for the 37mm. However, that was a new and secret development, which meant that a lot of the people that were supposed to run it were not cleared to know how it worked.
Yeah, and I've always thought the Sherman got a bad rap. Yeah, it's not equivalent to a Tiger, but I mean, the Germans were not trying to ship over an ocean. And, you know, a lot of people be shouting at me, you know, all the tanks that had to, you know, compared to a Tiger or to a Panzer, you know, had to be sacrificed. But it depends on who you talk to. You know, a lot of historians say it was not as bad, especially later in the war when you hit, you know, when they equipped the some of the Shermans with a bigger gun that could penetrate the German tanks. And a lot of the German tanks, you know, they were formidable, but they weren't reliable, you know. So at least on the Russian front and pretty much I think on the European front, you know, most of the Panzers and Tigers, you know, they succumbed to breakdown rather than actually being destroyed by the enemy.
Also, because we had enormous depth of spares, part of what the Germans would do would be they would not only shoot a Sherman, but they would try to keep, even after the tank had been disabled or officially destroyed, they would, knowing that if it was just taken out of action, it could be repaired quickly, they would try to do overkills to slow down its return to service.
Well, I mean, in the First World War, the Germans had a lot more captured British tanks than they actually had tanks they built themselves.
The AV-7 or whatever it was a gigantic monster with no ground clearance.
Exactly. And a lot of people, you know, the little French tank, you know, the first tank with a transversing turret, you know, a lot of people think that was the best tank of the
war. Well, it was there was that one, and then there was the British Whippet, which wasn't too bad for what it was.
No, I meant the First World.
I mean the First World.
I didn't think the Whippet made it into the First World.
Well, it was produced. I don't know how many got forward, but it was designed to follow the breakthroughs created by the Mark I's or Mark IV's or whatever, the traditional rhomboid tank. That started the British tradition of the infantry tank being a slow, you know, infantry support, and a cruiser, a faster tank designed to get into the enemy's rear and tear up the place like cavalry.
And of course, you know, the theory is you should not be pitting tanks against tanks. Tanks should be pitted against infantry. And if you want to take out tanks, use a tank destroyer.
Yes, which is to say a glass cannon.
Well, it depends. I mean, some of the tanks were pretty heavily armored. A lot of them were, of course, mobile artillery and not very well protected for the crew. But, you know, you had a chassis and a really big cannon. Long range, and then some, you know, depends on the theory. There were, you know, there are a few out there that were, you know, more heavily armored than a standard tank, though generally the what you gave up was the transversing turret. Is, you know, you would have to actually turn the tank to aim the gun, and the gun might have 3 or 4 degrees either side of travel.
And very limited elevation as well.
I think we have put those to bed, but I'll be back in just a second.
No, we're chatting to somebody on Facebook, but I was going to close this down, so you know anyway. Does someone hear me?
Yeah, I'm holding up the side.
Yeah, I'm going to close this down so you're on your way. Now I'm chatting to somebody on Facebook, actually, which is nice. We only met before. 4 years ago, yeah.
Well, if you're going to be shutting down, I'll wait to see if 50 comes back before everything goes down.
Yeah, I mean, I intended on closing this at 2 o'clock, and that's coming up, so yeah, soon.
Well, 50 said he'd be back in a few minutes. I didn't know when that few minutes would be.
Well, I meant a few seconds. I just had to take a nature break. But yeah, man, you know, I don't want to be the guy that keeps prolonging you from getting to bed or whatever.
No, I'm staying up for the day now. I've got things to do.
Actually, we need to find an excuse to do this at the summer solstice or something. Maybe half as long in the summertime?
Well, you know, maybe we could do something on LLC. I don't know if I want to give Ken another headache. Yeah, we're going to do it twice a year now.
Well, I was not thinking of twice. I was thinking of one and a half. Of course, we could get the pagans upset as damn Christians stealing another one of our holidays.
Yeah, that whole appropriation thing that gets people upset these days.
Well, I am feeling that it's time for me to say timber before I keel over. Yeah, I'm running on fumes. And so I will say see you Friday, or see you next year, or see you both. And thank you, gentlemen.
It's already next year. Yeah, it's already 2019, so I'll see you definitely see you Friday, Netminer.
Well, here on this channel, it may well be the next year.
Oh, for sure.
In any case, I'll talk to you down the road.
Well, we have once again extended the HPR due years for nearly 2 hours. So I guess that is some kind of accomplishment. Whoever is going to come by and clean up after us, whether it's Honky or Ken Fallon, I will absent the channel, so there won't be any confusion. And Seb, I guess you've got plans all ready for the rest of the day.
Yes, and Elf should wake up a bit more as well as it goes on, so that's good.
The sun has come up here, but I decided my own agent. I am going to try to settle down and see if I can get a couple hours sleep before I get up and do the stuff of the day. So, you know, I don't want to speak for the whole Hacker Public Radio. Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Reg just jumped in.
Hey, Reg.
Hey, Reg, it's been a minute. So,
Reg, I'm Reg, hearing I'm a series of clicks. Click.
Can you hear me now?
Perfectly.
Perfectly.
What's that, 5150?
How have you been?
Yeah, it's been a couple of years, man. How you doing?
I can't complain.
Yeah, I think I heard you last year. I couldn't talk then. He's sitting up at my desk now, chilling. Nothing much. Heard y'all yesterday. Well, how you been?
Have your mic open.
Hold on. I have to get it set right. Oh, can you give me a few minutes?
Sure, get it right.
Okay, now how about now?
Yeah, let's see if there's I don't hear any feedback. Yeah, earlier this summer was a little rough. I had a pulmonary embolism which I was not expecting, and you know, took me to the hospital for a while.
Well, I hope you got better.
I did. You know, most of their protocols are for people 10 years older or more than I am. And, you know, they were saying, yeah, you're going to have some trouble for 6 months and take it easy. And, you know, I was back to it within a couple of weeks.
They put you on any warfarin or anything?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be a blood thinner.
I'm going to be a
blessed in the rest of my life.
Yeah, I think I told you that a couple of years ago. I had that in 2012. I had 3 DVTs in 15 minutes.
Well, you know, my doctor and I was like, can I get off of this stuff, you know, because it's expensive. And he was pretty much thinking, well, you've got all these knee braces you've been wearing for 30 years because you're bad knees. That's probably what caused all the blood clots. You know, so if I'd never gone off the thinners, it probably never would have happened, you know. And, you know, I'd been off them for about 6 months. And then, you know, this thing happened. And I thought it was the arrhythmia, you know, and called them out. And they said, no, we don't think that's what it is. And took me in, and of course took me to a heart hospital and all that, and said, yeah, you've had an embolism. And well, even my heart doctor, I had to remind him. He said, you know, everybody tells me I'm gonna have to, he was telling me, oh yeah, quit your thinner in February. Now I was like, well, you know, a few months ago you were telling me I was gonna have to have it all my life. And he looked at the chart and he's like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, you can quit the aspirin, but you probably need to stay with the blood thinner for now on.
Yeah, I just go do my blood test every couple of weeks. I don't even argue with them. Going on 6 years now, I just do what I got to do.
Yeah, they got me on the more expensive stuff for Daxa, so I don't have to test it.
Well, I'm glad I don't have to pay. The VA covers. I heard you yesterday. Are you not drinking anymore? Remember when we were on? We were half lit early on. And
I really, you know, this time I've been maintaining because, well, this morning, and you know, it was like, yeah, if I get hammered, I'm gonna go to sleep. So. No, I've been pretty much maintaining all through this New Year's.
Yep, I haven't done anything. Smoked me a cigar this morning when I got up. I had a Cohiba somebody gave me about 2 years ago. Took about 5 tokes on it, put it out, put it back in its little box. Smoke it again next
year. That sounds pretty good. I hear Cohiba's pretty good.
Yeah, my sister had a friend who was, he got out of the military and he decided he wanted to do a tour of South America. And when he got to Cuba for a visit, he asked her if she could bring him, if he could bring her anything. She said, yeah, my brother always loved Cuban cigars if he could get them. And so when he came back, he gave me a Cohiba.
Yeah, I went through college. I not smoking a lot. Anytime we had a poker night or whatever, you know, I'd smoke a little, but, you know, Swisher Sweets and that's, you know, sort of thing. So completely a different, you know, strata of the Cohibas, but everybody says those are so good.
Yeah, they are nice, and they got a nice little box and everything. I was smoking when I was in the military, but that's 40 years ago. I had to quit in 95. So occasionally, I can't drink. I'm not supposed to drink, so I drink maybe once a year. Can't smoke, maybe drink smoke once a year, and basically that's it. Like when I go to the doctor, I don't have to lie and say, no, I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I didn't do anything. So I can tell them the truth.
Yeah, smoking, I don't, I wouldn't mind, especially now. It just makes me cough. But, you know, drinking is where I would draw the line.
Yep. Were you on all day yesterday, or were you just popping in and out?
Oh, probably yesterday is the least I've been on since the beginning.
Yeah, I didn't have much to do. So I was watching a bunch of... Remember the old TV show, The Equalizer?
Oh, I love that show.
Yeah, I woke up early one morning the other day, and it was on. It's one of these stations up here in Atlanta. And so I clicked the where else you can watch the thing, and it said the NBC app on the Roku. So I've been watching Equalizer for the last week and a half.
Yeah, back in the day, we used to call him the graphic equalizer.
Yeah. Robert McCall, you still on the farm up there in Kansas?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I moved from Robins Air Force Base, about 90 miles south of Atlanta, to Dunwoody, Georgia.
I remember, I think the last time, well, not the last time we talked, but you know, you were simulating a whole big server migration. So you guys still involved in that kind of stuff?
No, I'm just chilling. I bought me a house up here. And it's got three floors. I live on the top floor. The bottom floor has my computers, and I got a Plex server and a couple other servers. And I go out when I want to and come in and invite people over. But basically, I'm a hermit. I finally got my man cave.
Uh-huh. Sounds like the plan. Yeah, you know, I finally got where, you know, my old equipment was just too old to be sustainable, and it you know, well, I was taking care of my dad, but, you know, until he passed, but after that, rather than jumping back into it and being on a tractor, you know, 50 hours a week, it was so much easier just to turn over to a neighbor say, okay, you guys got the better equipment, you take care of it.
Yep, that's the way. I said I'm going up to the big city. I got a few friends up here. I see them a couple of nights a week. See my sister and her husband. And I don't have nobody to take care of. I can spend my money the way I want. I go to the doctor, come on home, and chill out.
Well, earlier this summer, I don't know if you followed me and heard this story, but, you know, I was on Craigslist, which I should never do because it always costs me money. But, you know, there was a fellow in Wichita had a 41 Caddy ambulance, and, you know, it was pretty ratty or whatever, but, you know, it was kind of solid, but, you know, didn't run or whatever, hadn't run in a while. And, you know, I knew a local guy with a rollback and said, you know, before I bid on this, what would it cost to get it home? So I talked to him and he said, you know, if you're in the, like, ambulances, do I got a deal for you? And went in town and this 84 Cadillac hearse. And you know, for most 84 Cadillacs, he wanted more for it than it would have been worth. But looking at it, you know, the mileage was really, really low. So, you know, I didn't even dicker with him. I gave him the $2,400. And, you know, since earlier this summer, I've been the proud owner of an 84 Cadillac hearse.
You have to do any real work on it or anything? I had a friend when I was in high school. 1973, he bought a Cadillac hearse. We used to ride around in that sucker down in Warner Robins. That was the party move. We had a good old time. And it was white, too. It originally was black, and he painted it white.
Well, no, I mean, it's a sweet spot. It is an efficient 250. I wouldn't have thought it would have been any good, but 250 cubic inch motor. And it's not going to win any drag races, but it gets you down the road with fuel injection. The interior is, like, you know, pristine. You know, the crushed velvet or whatever it is, you know, in the back is just great, you know, because, you know, you let these things sit outside and they go to crap. But this wasn't, and I'm keeping it inside. And, you know, the velour or whatever interior is just perfect. So, you know, I'm thinking this is my ultimate road trip machine.
Well, when I talked to you last time, I had an old 1996 Ford Contour, and I was never going to buy another car. I was going to buy me a scooter if I had to get anything, because I wasn't going to make any car payment. And then last year, I said, when I was moving up here, I said, I'm going to get me a car. I bought me a Explorer, and I keep that baby parked in the garage every night. I don't leave it out for nothing. I know what you mean. You got to take care of them. I paid for it, and I'm going to keep it. I'm not going to let it get all beat up and everything else. The one thing I can say, though, living up here, Atlanta metropolitan area, can't drive. I can always ride the bus or the train.
Yeah, it's good that you guys still have a metropolitan infrastructure, you know, because there's so many cities that they, you know, they were kind of paid off, you know. Oh, yeah, we want to sell cars, so why don't you kill your infrastructure?
Well, here up in Atlanta this year, they decided they were going to expand the train system to outlying counties that didn't want to do it when they set it up 30 years ago. For the next 20 years, they got these extra tax, and they got train stations planned all around further out from metropolitan Atlanta. When I first got up here, I bought a metro car, express car, put $10 on it. I think I've ridden a bus twice and a train three times, a VA hospital downtown. It was all right, but it's not something I want to do every day. Atlanta's the worst place in the U.S. for traffic. You hit the interstates at the wrong time, you won't go nowhere.
Yeah, still trying to work everything out, but I usually go to Penguin in Detroit in May, and I'm trying to work out to do it for Amtrak. I mean, you can't get the big suite. That is way too much. But you can get the small suite to yourself for not a lot, you know. And I looked at you wouldn't think you'd be in a big city. It's not to join that and go north. But I'm not sure I want to go that, you know, train both ways. And if you're due to train, then you're gonna wind up in Wichita and have to find a way to get back to Ellsworth. You know, so that's the part that is kind of problematic for me. But yeah, definitely, because it's like you would not the perfect time, but you'd leave about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then you'd ride the train to Detroit, and it would be 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So about 12 hours on a train, and some of it you'd want to sleep, but some of it you'd want to sit up and look out the window.
All the time I was in the military, I never rode the train. We'd always put equipment on train to move them. We had to go somewhere, load up. We'd load up the train, and then a month later, the train would get there with all our equipment. So I never rode Amtrak. I was never stationed any place that had trains available for passengers. And so this year in October, I told my sister, you know what? I want to ride the Amtrak. So for my birthday, I bought two tickets from Atlanta to New Orleans, and we rode the train. Should have bought the room, you know, where you can go and lay down on a bed and you can sit in a chair. But I got us a couple of seats on the train for $68 one way. But it was, like you said, it's 12 hours. It was 12 hours. I think we left here we were supposed to leave Atlanta 12 o'clock one Sunday morning, and the train was late. So we didn't leave till about 10 o'clock, and we got to New Orleans at about 10, 11 o'clock that night. But it was a long trip. I'm not going to do that again. Not, you know, just sit in a seat, pay the cheap price. And next time I go, I'm going to get a room with a bed for a little bit. But I didn't think it would take 12 hours. That was a long trip. I could say though that the chairs that you sit in, the seats are better than airline seats. I think you got more room, leg room. You can kick back and do like a recliner, real good. It was an experience. That's all I can say.
Oh, I'm sure there's got to be more room than there are on a recliner. And it's like, you know, if you're an airline, even if it's at night, you know, it's like, do I want to hit the button to recline and be a jerk to the person behind me?
Well, see, that's the thing I like with these. You could recline all you want, and the seats are far enough apart where they didn't bother the person that was behind you. And you had internet. And you had your electrical outlets you could plug in. We had a car where you could go eat if you wanted to. They'd eat breakfast and lunch. Just go on through. The one thing, though, that bothered me a lot was every time they cross a road, they have to ring that damn whistle. And so you have to get you some good noise-canceling headphones for the trip down, the trip back. Once we got there, we had a hotel at the Hilton, which was right off of Bourbon Street. So we didn't have very far to walk. You just go down Bourbon Street in the French Quarter, and eat all you want. And if you wanted to go to the casino, you walk down Canal Street about half a mile, and there was the casino. Get on a riverboat, and we had a good time. I hadn't been to New Orleans since 1960. Yep, I was a little kid when the last time I went.
Yeah, me too. My parents sent me to New Orleans in about the 70s, and there was a lot of educational stuff, which is probably lost on me. But I would definitely like to go back and check it out today.
One thing though, in October it was hot, it was humid. Good Lord, and everybody was wearing shorts. I was surprised it was that hot down there. It must have been 90 degrees for the 4 days we were there. And it rained every day. You had to take your umbrella because you'd be walking down Bourbon. The skies would just open up. People just running into places to get out the rain. And 10 minutes later, the rain quit.
Other than the rain, it would not be unusual. I mean, I'm not saying Kansas is as bad as Texas and you know, Louisiana, whatever, but we do have our hot days during the summer, so.
This wasn't summer. This was October 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th.
Well, in that case, yeah, probably not. I mean, my mom wanted me to have pralines, which I did.
Didn't have any pralines. They ate a lot of shrimp, you know, fried shrimp, regular baked shrimp, cooked on the skillet, just whatever. And we came out of the Hilton, and you're on the bottom floor. You just smell this shrimp, this fresh shrimp. Oh, it smelled so good. I smelled that stuff for 3 days after I got back here in Atlanta. It was magnificent food. It was expensive, but it was good.
Oh, yeah. So it's always expensive when you get away from home. But you're right. That was the thing played my mom, you know, in her later days. You know, she wanted seafood, and you know, we just didn't have it here. We do now, you know, stuff she would have wanted. You know, I could go to Dillon's and get stuff, but Kroger for everybody else. But in those days, you know, they're just, you know, if you wanted fish from the store, it was like fish sticks.
Well, I go to Kroger occasionally. Let me see. I think I went last week. They had a bag of shrimp, medium size, $17.98.
Yeah. You know, I got something about the same, like salad shrimp for wanted to do some egg foo young. You know, about the same price.
Yep, I like shrimp scampi, some onions and garlic, throw in a ton of butter. A little bit of lemon juice, and just throw them bad boys in there and cook them for about 2 or 3 minutes. Throw some angel hair pasta, and mix it up.
Oh, you make me hungry.
Well, catch your plane. I'll pick you up at the airport. And I got a bag downstairs in the fridge.
Give me a minute, and I'll be right back.
Okay.
No, my mom, she was born in Tequeen, and then later the family moved to Shreveport.
Shreveport. Yeah, I went to Shreveport. There's Air Force Base. To drive through Shreveport to head up to Lawton, Oklahoma, Fort Sill.
Well, that's how my parents met. My dad was stationed in Barksdale right after college.
Yeah, old Barksdale. Used to be a B-52. Well, back in my day, it was Strategic Air Command. They used to have B-52s down there. My dad used to go down there for DY. I hadn't been there, though, that way in about 20 years.
Oh, yeah. I think it's B-47 base when my dad was there. But always told the story of this, you know, B-47 had to come back in, but then, you know, they had to, before they could, they had to fly around for hours and, you know, burn off fuel. I think what it was is they, for some reason, ripped off the canopy. So the poor pilot, you know, he was out there in the whole wind blast for like 8 hours.
That's why he got paid the big bucks.
Well, I don't know about the bucks, but, you know, probably fun enough to fly those hot rod airplanes around.
Yep. Oh, did you get you anything for Black Friday for Christmas?
Well, I'm on my own now, so everything is, you know, what I do. But, yeah, I did go walk around Walmart for Black Friday, and, I should have waited till Black Friday. I don't know why I did, but I've been wanting to do some French fries, so I got an air fryer about a week or two before Black Friday. And I need to call them up because now it don't air or fry no more. I got the highest end one they had because it would do, you know, air fryer, and it would do dehydrator. And I said, yeah, I love me some dehydrated banana and apple chips. So I did that. You know, I did that and then figured out about halfway through what, you know, it wasn't doing anything anymore.
Well, okay. That's good. I didn't do much. I've been looking at this old 32-inch Dell monitor for the last year or so. I went into Costco last summer. They had it for $180. I'm going to get me. Need to replace my old 22-inch. I'm a deaf. Never did buy it. And then about 2 weeks before Black Friday, Amazon had it on sale for $149. I just said, well, might as well get it. It's not going to get no cheaper. So I ordered it, got it a couple of days, and it's sitting up here on my desk, big as my little Roku TV. Nice little thing. $149, I can't complain.
Well, I used to be a big gamer. I'm not so much anymore. I need to get back into it, but... yeah, I have a 130-inch monitor, but I had stuck on old PCs that, pretty much got out of the trash, or, you know, people throwing stuff away. So, you know, old Core 2 Duo, Duo PCs, and started watching on YouTube, Linus, but it's not Linus that we know from, Linux. It's this Linus guy who, does software and hardware, and he is not, you know, he's not open source unaware, but most of the stuff he does is, closed source. But he was talking about, Walmart gaming laptops and desktops, and the laptops were better than the desktops, but and the prices were coming down. I went in and looked, and on walmart.com, and then I looked at, and there's a company doing, you know, refurb HPs, with a gaming card and an i5, and the one I picked, 16 gig of memory and a gigabit hard drive, which is, you know, I've got other hard drives bigger laying around for failed systems that I can use. But, you know, it's $230 for an i5, 16 gig of RAM, and a gigabyte hard drive. And a gaming video card, NVIDIA. And I would think of that if I hadn't had so many beers. But, you know, it's like, yeah, I could take a chance on that. So, I've got that coming, you know, to replace the Core 2 Duo tower that I was thinking that, you know, was going to get me back into gaming.
Well, I still have my old Lenovo P580 laptop. I bought a laptop stand to slide it down, and it stands up next behind the monitor. I was thinking about getting me a Nook i7. I still haven't pulled that trigger. Still on my Amazon wish. Might get it. I'd like to have one of them. That might be the last PC I get.
Well, yeah, if you don't need the video graphics, that's the way to go.
Well, I don't do nothing but watch and everything. That's why I wanted the 30-inch monitor. I could unplug my TV from computer with the HDMI cable, and so I plugged it in the HDMI cable with a monitor. I got my TV and computer sitting up here on the desk side by side, and I can watch what I want and do what I want. Mainly, I needed the big monitor for. I don't have to wear my glasses no more when I see this big-ass screen. That's the main thing.
Yeah, that was the last year got the big display for my dad, you know, so he wouldn't have to put on his glasses to see the monitor. He seemed to be appreciative of that, but...
It makes a whole lot of difference. Once you hit 60 years old, your eyesight is gone. Mine left me about 10 years ago, and I had bifocals and trifocals. Sometimes you just don't want to wear those. And then I went to the doctor one time, and I told him, can you guys give me some computer glasses? I was going to the VA, and they said, yeah, we can make you. So I got some computer glasses. They work pretty good. But after a while, you sit in front of the computer 8 hours a day. You don't want to be wearing glasses. So I'm sitting up here now. I'm looking at it. I can just see everything without my glasses. It's the best investment I ever made.
Oh, yeah. I had those for a long time. They haven't really offered that to me for a while. But, yes, slightly less powerful glasses to do the computer. And then you go outside. You got to drive. Then these other glasses. But, you know, and I've had bifocals for a while. And it's like... You know, I can see my phone for about 10 minutes, and then I got to take my glasses off. You know, the first 10 minutes after they dial my glasses in, it you know, the lower thing works okay, and then after that, you know, not well, 10 minutes is a stretch, but you know, within a week or two, I'm taking my glasses off to see my phone.
Well. When I look at my phone without glasses, I can't see anything. So I have to put glasses on. What you rocking for a phone these days?
Oh, I get whatever was cheapest. I guess it's a Galaxy 7. And the only reason for that, and it's been a year and I still haven't done it, is the Lenovo... you know, Star Wars experience or whatever, where you put it into the goggles and you can fight Darth Vader. Well, no,
Ball.
Darth Vader's up there. You know, you start out with Darth Emo.
Okay, I got me a Motorola G5 Plus a year and a half ago, just when they came out. $300. Went on the Motorola site and said, I want an unlocked phone. They said, oh, we'll finance you. So finance it, send them $18 a month, paid that sucker off in October. It was only $300. Well, it does everything I need. Nothing extravagant, you know, 5.5 inch. You know, mainly I got it was because it doesn't have all that crap on it like Samsung. It's just a plain old Android experience. No extra software or anything. Put your credentials in it and you're off to go. The only thing I didn't like about it, it didn't have a RFID. You can't do none of the banking stuff with it. You know, you go up to a cash register and tap the thing. You can't do none of that.
Joe, https://www.youtube.com/watch. B equals BSHTFLH 6 AZW and AMP T equals 25.
And what was that?
Oh, that's the Poco phone.
The what?
Poco phone.
Papa Oscar Charlie Oscar?
Yes.
I just looked it up. I see it. Check it out.
Kyle, anyone here?
Yep, we here. Me and 5150. I see the Xiaomi Poco phone. F1, 64 gigs with 6 gigs of RAM. Dual camera, 6.18-inch LTE factory unlock. Global version, $318.
Yeah, I understand that the UI that comes with it kind of sucks. And the camera is... made to be worse through software, so it doesn't compete with what is it, the Pixel 3's flagship phone. But you can fix all that through rooting and ROMing it.
Yep, I'm looking at it. I can use my American Express membership rewards points. I almost did get a Pixel 2 last year, and then this year Google kept sending me emails, Red, you can buy you a Pixel 3. I might get a Pixel 3 next year when they get a Pixel 4 up.
Yeah, I'm a fan of getting by just what I can get for what I want to do.
Well, if you can get by, that's all you need. I've never been a flagship type person. I don't need that much phone for me to drop it and then have to cry and get it replaced. And if I pay my money for $300-$400 phone, I'm happy. Put a good case on it, good to go. If it breaks, I just buy another one. I see it was made by Xiaomi. I bought me a... You got into the smartwatch thing yet?
I did try to start Honky, put up a thing on, an independent deal. And I looked and got there are a couple Asus things out there, and the Asus one is not really supported anymore. And I thought, yeah, let's try that and see what we can do with it. And it's recognized by the new software, but it won't connect. So I'm thinking, okay, yeah, let's beat on it with the independent software. But there's a lot of things, interconnectability not supported. I mean, you can do your own calendar, but you really can't export into Google or something like that. So it's just something to play with. But yeah, after having something on my wrist for years and years and years, it's been very liberating not to have to have that.
Well, back in June, I said, I'll think about getting me a smartwatch, but I didn't like the Wear OS, from Android, and I wasn't going to buy a iWatch for nothing. And I just wanted something that I could do my walks with. It would tell me my steps and my mileage every day. And it could have a couple other stuff in it. So I saw on Amazon had a Amazfit Bip for $70. So I ordered one for myself and one for my sister. She's my walking partner today. And so you can set it up. It does everything I need it to do. And it's a nice little watch. Check it out. It's on Amazon called Amazfit Bip, $70. Nice little watch. And so I use it every day. I keep it on. You can buy straps for it. I had the original black strap. I bought a brown leather strap, put on it. Do your sleep. It'll tell you your pulse rate, your location. It has GPS. It has a compass in it. You can do different types of workouts. Tell you your steps, your mileage. You can put different faces on it. Everything. It's a nice little watch for $70. Plus, it lasts for 3 weeks. You only have to charge it about 3 weeks, 4 weeks at a time.
Yeah, I was never so much dialed into, what's my health thing. I probably should be, but it was more, I'm meeting lunch in town. What am I missing on IRC? And These days, it's not so much. Back in the day, you know, I was on my mobile dialed in the IRC all the time.
Well, I got it after I had my blood clot, C12. Doctor said, you have to start walking again. I can't run. Knees are shot. Out of bad legs. I've been doing 3.5 miles for the last couple of years every morning. Get up at 5 o'clock, just go out and walk around the neighborhood, and then come back. I got my 10,000 steps or 3.5 miles, whatever.
That's probably a really excellent idea. You know, my doctors are like, yeah, take this handful of pills every day.
Well, I take a handful of pills every day, but it don't help my dead leg. That's why I do the walking. That was one of the things that came out of my blood clots. Remember the TV show House? That's me. I had a dead leg from knee on down. Can't feel nothing.
Oh, wow. That is not a good scene. You know, I always liked that show, but I didn't know you're like, you know, you couldn't feel half a leg.
That's what they make walking cane. That's what happens when you get old. You get as old as me. I'm 62. That's what happens.
Well, I'll have to put a link in the chat. There was this old, you know, local character who, well, I'd met, but I wouldn't say I knew, but passed away in this last week, but one of the things he was known for was these canes, and his canes were not made out of wood. They were, how do I say it? They were made out of a bull part stretched over a steel rod.
Okay. I got a couple of wood ones. I got an ornate wood one. I got my great grandpa's old cane from 1950, and I got the VA regular L-shaped aluminum cane.
Well, this wasn't any of that, but I've got the website loaded up, so I'll put it in the chat.
Let's see. Well, 50, I got to go. I got somebody knocking on my door. I think it's a relative or somebody going to bring me some dinner, even though it's still breakfast. I might get on later and holler at you, still able to. If not, I'll holler at you. You still on Lugcast?
I am. And, you know, like I said, if you want to come back and check the mumble, I'm just a step from posting a link. So, you know, if you might be interested, go look at it.
Okay. I'll check it out. Lugcast still second Friday?
First and third Friday.
First and third, okay. Well, I'll holler at you. It's good to get back to you, boy. Later. I'm out for a few.
Well, shoot, I think Reg disconnected just right before I posted my link. That's going to be probably not, it's probably going to be distasteful to a lot of people, but I'm thinking the entire, New Year's Eve system is probably going to be flagged not safe for work. So, do we have anybody in the chat? Mumble that has the authority to say, yeah, it's done, let's quit.
You still there, 50?
Unfortunately, yes.
Well, I answered the door. It was just the kid next door. Yeah.
I was just saying, was there anybody out there with the authority to say, yeah, we're done this year?
It seems to be. There's only been a couple of us on. I'll see you next year.
Looking forward to it, man.
Yep. Have a good one. Take care. Take your medicine.
Yeah, I always need to do that.
I'm out. Bye.
Just like my dad, you know. Always thought all these things he had to take, and it's like, you know, what I got to take is at least as much, if not more. It's depressing. It's depressing when you become your parents.
Of course. I gotta go. See you later, 51. 50.
See you next year, Reg. Okay, I'm still recording. I will mute and deafen myself, and whoever jumps back in and decides that we're done, then we're done. And K-Wishers just told me, looks like he's killing the stream, so... Yeah, we're, what, three-plus hours post what we should be? Oh, man, that is not a good thing.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.